thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hell, I hate you, Jack. Hello and welcome, everybody, to yet another amazingly fabulous Bravo level of quality show. And this is Monday Night Magic, episode 216. Guys, why am I so excited tonight?
I'll tell you why you're excited, Tom. We have From the Vault's Relics, the complete spoiler. And you know why else we're excited?
We also have From the Vault's ex-podcasters of MTGcast and Monday Night Magic with us tonight.
Yeah, and do you hear about the card that's in that set? I hear it's called Gavin Varhey.
Hello.
Chest pain. Gavin, where the hell have you been?
So I was just telling people the story before the podcast. So every week it's summer now, so I'm not taking classes. And every week it's like, all right, I'm going to be on the podcast this week. I'm going to be on the podcast this week. And
mm-hmm.
So like, I'll inevitably get like busy doing something, or I'll, like, my draft will go too long, or this or that and the other. And so today I woke up and I was like, okay, it's Monday. I'm not going to leave the house until Monday Night Magic
ends. I have a boner like I have every other morning, and I'm going to be at Monday Night Magic.
And especially after the pre-release, where multiple people came up to, and told me I needed to get back on the show, including some people who really complained about how rude Conley was. I needed to step up my game. So,
was it rude into a particular person or a state, or just generalness?
So this guy named North Dakota Kid.
Yeah, I was wondering if he had a I Hate Mount Rushmore shirt on, or had like a Sioux hockey jersey on. That might be a big tip.
But I'm back. I'm here this week. I would say I'll hopefully be here next week, but who knows? It's like flipping a coin that with 25 different sides on it. So
we have to see. Well, hopefully, I get back on Monday. I was about to say we may have to have a Tomless show, but I'll be back as of Monday morning. So never mind. I'm going on an Alaskan cruise.
You're just hopping all over the freaking place these days.
That's what happens when you're unemployed. It's like, I am, and you have a sugar mama. That's the key second part to that sentence.
Wait, you aren't unemployed anymore, Tom? What happened at the hospital?
I finished my fellowship.
Oh, okay, yeah.
As of July 1st.
Yeah, you've been gone a long time, Gavin.
I am finished with school for the rest of my life. It was the most anticlimactic thing. It's like you wake up July 1st, you're like, huh, I don't have to go to work today.
Dot.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to have a bowl of cereal and watch basically all the TV shows I've been TiVoing. There is so much good TV. We talked about how much I love Dirty Jobs. And do you guys ever watch Project Runway?
My mom does.
It's a phenomenal show.
I have testicles, Tom.
I have big hairy testicles, and that show was fantastic.
Wow, the cast is really downgraded since I left.
So, guys, should we talk a little bit about magic before I get...
I guess since this is a magic podcast, yeah.
Because I want to save my hail talk until the end of the show, because I'm pissed off about that. That was kind of the wrath of God hit my car in the middle of South Dakota, in the middle of nowhere. Apparently, the storm went over just this one little church in a town of 60 people and decided to dump like 10 pounds of ice on my car. In nice, discreet, softball-sized chunks.
At least they were uniform.
What's that?
I said, at least they were uniform.
If anybody's ever sat through an enormous hailstorm, I've never seen a hail this big in my life. It was really like witnessing cannonballs being shot at the ground. At about a 45-degree angle as well. That was a really cool part of it. And we're all like idiots, like watching it right through the window until one smacks the window right in your face and it cracks the window. You're like, we should probably get in the basement now. and then you're still trying to peer through the little window at the basement to try to see the ice in the ground. We're all about 8 years old inside. That's what I realized. And you're kind of hoping you'd see somebody get hit by one. Not in the head so they get really hurt, but like in the arm or the leg. So, guys, we have a couple of big news items this week for Magic. We're going to go right into this week in Magic news, and we have two big ones. The biggest one is we actually have the full official list of the latest From the Vault set, From the Vault Relics. This is, if you can find it, this will have a suggested retail price of $34.99, and you can attempt to try to bribe your local card store to get you one of these on August 27th. So, Gavin, it's fantastic to have you back. Why don't you maybe run through the card list quick and tell us if you're excited or not for this set?
Oh, I am definitely excited for this set. I love these box sets. I think that they're like an excellent
push. Have you ever actually gotten one of these?
When I went to the, I've never bought one. But when I went to the community cup, they gave us From the Vault's Exile. So I have one.
Oh, okay, nice.
But the cards in the set look awesome. Even the one that we don't know about sounds awesome. So the cards in the set are Karn, Silver Golem, EDH favorite card for people who love like the colorless EDH decks, always a classic. Ivory Tower, a card that has been frustrating people since the dawn of time. Aether Vial, a card played as far back as Legacy, very powerful card in creature-based decks just because of how fast you accelerate things out. Mox Diamond, got a Mox, very powerful, of course, accelerates you, played in dark decks like 43 Land and Legacy. Isochron Scepter, a favorite card that everyone just, it's always lovable. It gets better as time goes on. There's new instances you can put on it.
It's just a fun card. I mean, nothing makes you feel better than, like, you feel like you're cheating in the game because you keep reusing the same card. That feels
right,
good.
You put, like, you can always do something, you know, that'll make everybody hate you, like put Orym's Chain on it.
Uh-huh.
But,
or Twin Cast, you know, like,
yeah, or you can put, you know, something cute on it, too. There's, like, just, like, even a Lightning Helix or Lightning Bolt is kind of neat. I'm sure there are all kind of more obscure options, but Mirari, you know, big card in Odyssey Block. And, you know, cool.
And now lining fish tanks everywhere.
Nevenroll's
Disc.
Hey,
I'll play that card.
Good old Larry Nevin. Bring us Nevenroll's Disc. Always a classic. Still played today. Jester's Cap. A lovable card. People have always loved Jester's Cap. It's a cool card to have in there. Sundering Titan, which is a cube favorite. Played in far back formats. One of the best things you can snap into play. Off of, you know, Tooth and Nail or whatever. Great card. Zurn Orb, played Legacy in 43 Land. Also, just, you know, people... It was banned at one point, right? I believe.
Zurn Orb, yes. Orb. Yeah, it was gone for a while. Because it made games too long. That was what the worry was.
And while considerably less powerful now, Zurn Orb still has a home. Massacre, which is, you know, you look at the Urza Block, and even though it's not one of the most necessarily powerful cards, it's one of the most iconic cards from the Urza Block. I think Urza Block, you know, powerful artifacts, Masticore. Black Vise, good old opposite of Ivory Tower. Very good. Played on turn one, deals a lot of damage. Soul Ring, probably the best card in any cube drift. Just accelerates you so fast. Auto, you know, a card that you almost automatically play in a lot of vintage decks. And then Memory Jar, a card which had to be banned when it originally came out. And very powerful. And then we also have one more that we don't know about the abilities of yet, but it's a preview from Scars of Mirrodin, which is sort of Body and Mind. And just like Sword of Fire and Ice and Sword of Light and Shadow, this one hints at protection from green and blue and has two other matching abilities.
Now, what do you guys think? Well, a lot of questions, that we had a lot of emails about this set coming out this week. And, you know, some people love it. If you can get your hands on one of these for $34.99, it's going to be one of the best investments you ever make. And other people have asked, will they get a little bit angry because they feel like they're either working during the day or they just can't, they don't have a local card shop, they can't get their hands on one of these. Do you got pros, cons? Are you excited for these? Do you not care? What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Gavin.
Well, I always think that these are really great because I think that, you know, From the Vault's Exiled and From the Vault's Dragons were both great sets. I think From the Vault's Relics, like, you know, promises to capitalize on a lot of the same things that were so great in the past two sets. Yeah, they can be hard to find, but that's also kind of the allure of something like this because they are short printed and they are kind of a collector's item. If everybody could get their hands on one of these for $35, not only would the value of all the individual cards drop, but, you know, some of the cards in here are worth, like, Mox Diamond alone is, you know, probably worth more than the $35.
Yeah, well, I actually put in the little brackets, this is from Star City Games, the prices for each thing. Like,
yeah,
right now.
And Mox Diamond, according to Star City Games prices, is currently at $46. So you're making your money back. And so if, you know, anybody could get a hold of one of these, if you could buy them as easily as a Rise of Eldrazi booster pack, it would be a much different story. But the fact that they're kind of hard to find, the collector's items that you have to pre-order, yes, they're difficult to find for some people. But I think that makes it all the more sought after when they actually get a hold of one. And, you know, they hold it in their hands and they kind of, like, keep it close like a small child and maybe rock it ever so slightly and sing it a lullaby. I mean, it's now, stuff like this that make it really cool.
You take your cards a bit more friendly than I do, Gavin.
He has hand-knitted little sleeves for each card. Yeah, it's really, really cute. Now, what do you guys care that some of the cards have new art? Do you feel like that's...
I was actually just going to bring that up. I think that's really cool. I love the new art on cards.
Did the Nervenhall's disc ever turn into the one where it's the hand clasping that was spoiled so early?
At least not that I'm aware in this set. It has not been told that this is one of the nine cards that has new art. It was not Nivenrahl's disc. The ones that are going to have new art is Ivory Tower, the Vial, the Mox Diamond, which that could be pretty cool, actually. Isochron Scepter, the Orb, Master Core, Black Vice, and then Soul Ring.
Which is interesting, because, yeah, now that Jack brings it up, when we saw how this originally spoiled, the card seemed like an auto-lock for Nivenrahl's disc. So I don't know, that's weird that that's not one of the ones with alternate art, if apparently that's the case. We still haven't seen all these super close, though, right? Because otherwise we would know what sort of Body and Mind does.
Exactly, yeah. We just have sort of that far away, I believe it was from the Star City Games, Evan Irwin's like Facebook or Twitter page, I think is where we got the picture of this from a Chinese or a Japanese Magic forum, I believe is where the whole card list came from.
Yeah, so there still could be some inaccuracies, you know, like, you know, but...
Well, I mean, if that was the case, Gavin, and it wasn't the matching art, this wouldn't be the first time that people over at the MTG Sally Rumor Mills, or anywhere else for that matter, have gotten a hold of a piece of art several sets before it was actually used. There was some card in M10, it was one of the, or no, Zendikar, excuse me, it was one of the Land Fetchers, and they had the art as early as M10. So, I mean, that says something too, you know.
Right. What's interesting about this, though, is when Wizards of the Coast previewed the From the Vault's Relics set.
They used,
I mean, obviously, they have all the
Nerven, Hergen, back.
Sound like the Swedish chef. Hoard.
The card that has the disc in it that blows things up, yeah, they actually used that art. Yeah, I mean, but would they purposely mislead people into maybe thinking that there was something else? Who's to say?
No, Wizards doesn't really, you know, mislead people like that.
Well, I was about to say, you don't think they'd be that tricky, right?
Well, they're not really into, you know, they have nothing to gain, really, by misleading somebody in that way. But I'm looking down the list, and I'm seeing what other cards it could possibly be, and, I mean, maybe, like, I was going to say Zerna Orb or Sol Ring, but I can't even see it, which makes me really suspect. I mean, obviously, this seems pretty legit. Like, we have, you know, got pictures from the source, I mean, so it seems like this is real, but it's weird, maybe, you know, we saw it from a long distance away, so perhaps which cards had alternate art, which wasn't quite correct, I don't know.
So, we're doing a little bit of speculation, but at least we have the full card list. And I think people are going to be excited for the Relic set, because artifacts are nice, as you can play, you know, if you play EDH, this is perfect, or cube drafting. This is awesome. You can actually play with these cards in any EDH deck or cube that you want.
Oh, all of these are EDH staples. I mean, at any given point, I could see myself using one of these cards.
And I actually went through and added up the value of all these cards, and if I had to pick ones like Sol Ring, I went through the revised ones. It's about $110 plus whatever the sort of Body and Mind will be, if you were to go buy these as singles.
So you're getting a major value for your $34.99, folks. And I mean, see, that's what I like about From the Vault, is so many times you hear about, like, Wizards maybe doing something as a blend cash grab, like by creating this card or that card, but they also give back a lot to the community through stuff like Magic Player Rewards and From the Vault. They make very expensive cards, like Mox Diamond, very cheap and affordable.
Anything else that you guys wanted to say about this? We know when it's coming out. We have the list of cards. Seems like if you can get your hands on one, you're going to want this set. That's the bottom line.
So I'm looking on MTG Salvation right now at the thread, and it says on there that Nivenrahl's disc is actually one of the ones that does have new art.
Okay, good. That fits with what we know of, or what we suspected from before. Good.
Yeah, so that's good.
I'll put a star by it, Gavin, just for you.
Yeah, which means if there are nine here, that would mean that one of the ones that we had mentioned has having new art doesn't. I'm trying to figure out which one. Disc.
This is investigative journalism happening right in front of your ears.
No, this is online. That's nine. That makes nine.
Okay.
I have eight before this. Okay, cool. Perfect.
So, I mean, and I actually took a look at, I was thinking, how much are the old From the Vault sets? And Dragons is right now $75 at a lot of places, and Exile is about $100.
Yeah.
Do you guys predict, what do you think is going to be the end secondary market value for From the Vault Relics? I'm going to say $150.
I'll probably lean with you. Go ahead, Gavin.
I feel like I'm on the prices right. What is the market value of this?
Yes, and if you go over, I will not penalize you for going over.
You know, I could easily see it, being about $150. Because, I mean, they're all in one place, and the market value is pretty high. And also, some of the cards, I think, are probably, like, Mox Diamond. Seems like it would keep going up, even though there's going to be more in circulation. You know, the promo one's going to be sought after. Because these are all the prices for the current cards, and, you know, their latest printed edition.
Especially for cards like Sol Ring and Ivory Tower, where people,
right.
you actually want to get a black bordered one, and now you actually get a black bordered copy of these cards that a black bordered Sol Ring, a beta Sol Ring is probably going to be like $50 anyways. If the revised one's $12.
But yeah, I mean that.
Great. Go ahead.
That's all I was saying. This is great.
Okay. I'm going to go with probably it'll hit the ceiling at 180, but it'll probably settle around 135. And my reasoning for that is, as popular as some of these cards are, I mean, you know, there's only past a certain point people are going to want to pay for Magic, and especially, like, for their favorite cards. Because at the same time, I mean, Tom, you know, it would be nice to have a black bordered one, but there comes a certain point where, you know, do I just want the card, or do I want the alternate art foil, amazing, it's going to leap out of the box one?
Yeah, that's the one card I almost wish they would have left the old art on would have been Naveen Rawl's disc. To me, it's a very iconic piece of art. Where when I think of Naveen Rawl's disc, I think of that weird tentacle coming out of that middle of that medallion. Where I'm not going to recognize Naveen Rawl's disc with the new art. If I could have gotten a black bordered one with the old art, that would have been amazing.
And foiled. Don't forget
and foiled. Exactly, and foiled. That would have been one of the coolest looking cards I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and the foiling process they use on these always comes out really nice. I've actually picked up a From the Vaults Tinker and a Gifts Ungiven, and man, it just like the shine on it. As soon as you top deck that thing, somebody knows you've pulled it. Because it's like blinding you with its brilliance.
And Gavin, I'm actually glad you're here to talk about the next news item that has me potentially very excited for what it hints at in the future of Magic. And this is the very unassuming word emblems. For one, the more unfancy words you're ever going to hear when you talk about Magic rules is emblems. I wish they just would have called it flair. You know, Planeswalker can have flair. So, Gavin, tell me, what is this hoopla about emblems? What are these, and why do we potentially care about these?
So, emblems is a rules change that came out this week. And for now, it doesn't really mean anything. But as always, these things happen, and then in the future, more is added. So what an emblem is it just something that you have, like, you know, say, an emblem, that just says something about the game that can't be taken away or changed or modified in any way. For example, the one emblem that currently exists is Elspeth's ultimate ability. So instead of saying all your permanents are indestructible for the rest of the game, it says, you know, you get an emblem that says all of your permanents are indestructible for the rest of the game. And this is good because there was confusion before, like, you know, what happens after I use Elspeth, the cards I play after it have indestructible, but that's not immediately intuitive. So an emblem kind of makes sense. It's a quirky little thing, and I'm going to be interested how they use it in the future. Some people have speculated, you know, it'll be used for, like, poison emblems.
Yes! Oh, God, please, yes.
Or you know, other things. But we'll see what Scars brings to the table. I could see other cards using it. The only thing I care about is as long as the game doesn't get to a point where you're like, modifying emblems, where it's like, you know, change the text of target emblem to say why, or destroy target emblem, or anything ridiculous like that, I'm good with it. As long as it's, you know, just these global effects that are like, just makes it easier to know what's going on. That's really good. But it adds a whole other layer to the game if you're going to make it something that actually matters.
And Gavin, I mean, just if you had to purely speculate, do you believe that we will be seeing poison coming back in Scars of Mirrodin? We have a fair amount of evidence pointing towards yes. Nothing concrete, but we have a lot of hints.
People say that poison's going to be back in every set for like the past 4 years.
Yeah, that's usually me, because that's how excited I am for it to come back.
Yeah.
If they give me a poisonous ooze, I will probably just quit playing Magic, because that'd be like, that's the height of Michael Jordan's career. You just got to quit then.
I mean, poison could definitely be back, but at the same time, I don't feel like there's a large incentive for it to exist in Mirrodin. I don't feel like that's the plane they would bring it back on. Even with, like, you know, the black goo that was left there from Yawgmoth or whatever that, like, kind of fueled the whole past storyline, I just don't feel like Mirrodin's the place where poison's going to happen. I feel like when they get to a plane where it's kind of like, I mean, this is kind of going to be a crazy example, but say the Muraganda plane that you kind of saw in Future Sight with, you know, like, the dinosaurs and, like, you know, the overgrown nature kind of thing.
Yeah, the Muraganda petroglyphs,
And a Purisaur and stuff like that. That's where I kind of felt like we would see poison most, is if we ever get to a plane like that. Because that's a very natural setting, and getting bit by a spider and being poisoned is like a natural thing to do, and it makes sense in the setting where, with Mirrodin, the whole poison mechanic would kind of be a stretch.
Let's see. And kind of go along with cards that have me very excited is we had the M11 release events, pre-release events. And Gavin, did you get to go to a pre-release or release? Since we've captured you here.
I not only did I go to a pre-release, but I went to a pre-release. That was really fun. And then I also went to a Grand Prix trial this past weekend that happened to be on the release day. So they gave out the promos to everybody, too. So that was good.
Now, I mean, what did you end up playing? Did you have any like favorites from your limited pool or any tips for people at all?
Well, the things about M11 that I've noticed so far in the games I've played is it's a little bit of a faster format than M10. There's a lot more evasion. There's a ton of common flyers.
Yes, know? Just in white. If you just look right, you're like, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Exactly. You have like Stormfront Pegasus, Cloud Crusader, Assault Griffin. Those are just ones that immediately come to mind. I'm sure there are others. And, you know, my pre-release deck was just, black, white, lots of flying. And, you know, it was pretty easy to steal victories when your opponent's literally like over three-fourths of the creature in my deck had flying. So it's pretty easy to win when all of your cards are unblockable and your opponent's cards aren't. And so I felt like that's a really good thing. I felt like they were good ways to manage bombs. For example, Plummet deals with a lot of the rare bombs, like Baneslayer Angel or whatever. But it's also just very good in general. Like, I've main decked Plummet most of my drafts because there's a lot of flying in the format. And, you know, there are obviously some big bombs, Grave Titan, Primeval Titan. But, I think it's a pretty good format. I love Scry. Scry is awesome. I draft Scry cards pretty highly, and I'm pretty happy whenever I cast one.
Okay, somewhere Eric, you know, right now he's feeling like he needs to be, he needs justice, and so we need to revisit Frost Titan. So we gave Eric and just the entire Frost Titan family a really hard time at our special spoiler episode, and it sounds like now that the Frost Titan's been out there, he's actually not as bad as we thought. And Gavin, we were talking about this a little bit before the show started, so do you mind sharing like how the Frost Titan has sort of grown on us?
Well, I mean, we kind of brought this up at the preview podcast, too. But Frost Titan is the weakest of its cycle. It's not close. I mean, it's still nothing compared to any of the others. But at the same time, it's still a 6-mana, 6/6 in blue with two good abilities. You know, two beneficial abilities. You can argue, like, about how strong they are, but they're definitely beneficial abilities nonetheless. And blue hasn't gotten a lot of cards like this in the past. And I've already made several... Not several, but a couple of post M11 standard decks, which include Frost Titan.
And we were talking about the release events, pre-release events, and now coming up soon, we're going to be having M11 game day. This is on August 14th and 15th. Why I'm excited for this is if I show up, I get a Liliana Spectre promo. I could really care less. But for somehow, if maybe one of our nice listeners gets a top 8, or if somehow people are dropping dead, get food poisoning, and I get some sort of top 8 finish...
What a coincidence that would be.
Yeah, I brought free snacks. You know, everybody's like, I got all these, you know, really warm, they've been in my car for a while, you know, ham sandwiches, you know, with mayonnaise on them.
And a little bit of mold.
And some rice. You know, because basically if you leave rice out for more than about 5 minutes outside, it's going to get you sick.
Really?
Yeah, and for some reason, rice is it's just like a bacteria petri dish.
But it's okay indoors.
I learned on this show.
Yeah, I love rice, but when it's outside on any sort of like a picnic or a buffet, I avoid it like the plague.
Oh, really? That's weird. But inside, it's okay.
Yeah, as long as it's kind of kept, you know, some sort of like heated or something, so you can prevent bacteria from growing. Otherwise, it's just bacteria seems to like to grow in room temperature rice, so it scares me.
I feel bad for all those people on Survivor then who just eat rice all the time outside.
And I'm also scared of hot tubs too, though, for the same reason, because hot tubs too are also just The hot tubs, you can get Pseudomonas over your entire body. It's just bad news. I do not go in hot tubs.
I don't think I could ever go in a hot tub again after hearing that.
Yeah, Pseudomonas, people get like this kind of folliculitis, so like it's an infection of the kind of hair follicles is what it is, from Pseudomonas that can grow in the hot water, and it's really, really nasty. And also kind of think about sometimes if you're at take my weekend, you're with a bunch of drunk people and other, you know, Perry, South Dakotan people who have been using this hot tub. They maybe haven't showered for a few days. And it's like soup. You know, you put a bunch of sweaty guys, hairy guys, into soup, you know, change them out a few times. What you have left at the end of the night is gross.
And then the water doesn't really get filtered that much.
Not a whole lot. and it's just constantly kind of heating up, cooling down, heating up, cooling down.
Oh,
yeah, it's amazing. There's got to be at least a couple Band-Aids in there, guaranteed to be at least one or two Band-Aids in there.
So anyways, we were talking about Magic.
So the reason I want to get a top 8 finish at M11 Game Day is the top 8 people get a full art Mitotic Slime.
Ooh.
I want that. I don't want to pay full secondary market value for it either. So this might be one of the first times I'm actually motivated to do well.
Yeah. Tom, well, you better go make top 8.
I actually have a reason to try. I will try and win you a slime this time.
I would greatly appreciate if anybody can somehow win me. I don't know what I'll need to give you. I'm willing to give you cards or favors, but I want to get that full art Mitotic Slime. What else do we got on here? We talked about Poison, which I'm so excited for Poison. Because, Gavin, a couple episodes ago, I was obviously very excited for having Poison coming back. Just thinking about Marsh Viper and Swamp Mosquito and stuff, I just, gets you really going. But also, seems like R&D these days has really been trying to do a good job of exploring new design space. You know, now we can use things like life totals. They've really been opening up doors that were closed off before due to how the rules worked. And we spent a lot of time talking about what would be cool ways to use Poison as a design space. And we came up with ideas of, you know, spells could have an alternate casting cost and maybe giving yourself poison counters or taking poison counters away from your opponents or having spells as having poison counters as part of their cost. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think that as with any, you know, old mechanic you could bring back, there is a lot of potential untapped design space. You just have to be very careful when you're doing things like giving people spells for free that give poison counters. Because, for example, maybe in standard, in limited, it's probably fine if you can make poison big enough mechanic. And in standard, it could be reasonably okay. But the further back you go into, you know, extended, vintage, legacy, if the card is remotely playable, then the cost is almost non-existent because no one else is going to be poisoning you. So there's a lot of tension there when doing things like that. But I do think there's a lot of untapped design space in regard to poison counters or emblems, whichever. And there's a lot you can do in that world. You know, making, like, I think, you know, having a lot of creatures that affect poison counters in ways that they couldn't before, you know, give you an ability to add a poison counter and adding you a poison counter, or, you know, you'd be a leech that drains poison counters out of you, could lead to a really interesting limited environment. I always love it when limited environments have more than one thing going on, because it gets kind of repetitive if the one thing going on is like, all right, I'm going to bring your life total to zero, and it's that way every game. But if you can play these little sub-games of, okay, let's play the poison counter like deck or whatever, or, you know, in Rise of the Eldrazi, let's play the, you know, can I ramp to my Eldrazi before you kill me deck. Like, I think that's really interesting and dynamic. It keeps Magic fresh. And so, yeah, I think definitely there's a lot of cool things you can do with poison, and I think it would be a great mechanic to see back someday. I just want to get your hopes up for it in Scarce.
And, Gav, you know what else keeps Magic fresh is having it appear in little tiny cameos in a bunch of weird movies and TV shows.
That's true.
Because we all got to witness the box office abomination that is The Sorcerer's Apprentice came out this past week.
Well, it did have Nicolas Cage in it.
And the thing is, I will see this movie. When I say the movie's terrible, that doesn't mean I'm not going to see it and give them my money, but I realize that it's going to hurt me when I see the movie.
Oh, dude, you're such a glutton for punishment.
I haven't heard it's you know, that terrible or anything. I know it did really bad at the box office.
Yeah, it's not like Last Airbender terrible, but it also finished third. You know, in its opening weekend is a little rough. It did go up against Inception, though, so that's a little tough one to compete.
It's like being guaranteed second, right?
It's like if you came out, like, all these executives, like, when Toy Story 3 eventually got announced, you just got to be like, ah, damn it. Because you're like, we can't win. Unless they made E.T. 2, that's what the only thing that would make. Do you guys know they're making Independence Day 2 and also a third one?
Yeah.
This came up to mind because I watched it on TV last night.
They're making a sequel to Tron. I wasn't even expecting that.
Yeah. Well, I'm showing my age here. And for you guys who are younger than me, I want to see if you get the same warm fuzzy feeling. You know, born in 79, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, you could rent VHS tapes, but it was still kind of expensive. You didn't do it very often. You got really excited for movies when they were played on TV. I have found, if I'm given the option, if I had like the shiny Blu-ray copy of Independence Day versus the edited one for TV with censorship on TV, I will watch the one on TV first.
Complete with Mother Lovers and other substitutes.
Yeah, like Snakes on a Plane. Yeah, Mother Lovers. But I think this is from people that were you know, before the time where I could stream off of Netflix like 25,000 different movies, where you had very limited access to them. So when you had movie on TV, that was an event. Like, they advertised it for weeks and weeks that they're going to be showing E.T. or whatever movie, Firestarter, on the broadcast television channel that week.
I totally know where you're coming from, because I remember when I was 5 years old getting excited because The Wizard of Oz in full color was going to be on television.
There we go. Gavin, am I going back too far? Do you remember this at all?
No, I can kind of remember this when I was a little kid.
And this is where I'm starting to realize I'm getting old. So I'm like, there's going to be some people that don't know what I'm talking about, and that's when you know you're old.
When did you see Tron originally?
Oh, when did I see it? I'm trying to think if I would have saw that actually.
You see it when you were a kid, or did you see it?
Oh, yeah, as a kid. And that movie blew your mind.
So does seeing the trailer make you feel good inside?
Yes. If they can kind of recapture that same mystique to it, I think so. It's hard. It's one of those things that's not going to age as well. So when that movie came out, computers were new enough where you almost could suspend belief, where you didn't really understand how they work, that there could be this world of people and viruses and chips in there. But now you'd just be like, what the hell are they talking about? That's ridiculous.
It is going to have girls in neon, though. So, I mean, that's a plus, if nothing else, right?
And I wonder if they're going to somehow have a little cameo from the Tron guy, the guy that made his own Tron suit, who's just famous for Tron, that he made his own glowing Tron suit. I hope they somehow have him in this movie.
I was telling my friends that there's no way I'm going to see this movie unless I know somehow that man made it in.
And where we got into all this is, it seems like Hasbro, who owns Wizards of the Coast, who makes Magic, is that all of a sudden Magic has been appearing in movies and TV shows. And I know this had happened infrequently in the past, but now it feels like these are planned promotions, that this didn't happen by chance. And the biggest one was The Sorcerer's Apprentice, where I will see the movie this week. I can tell you next week exactly how it shows up in the movie. But this was a planned promotion, where they even had a contest sponsored by the Wizards of the Coast in conjunction with The Sorcerer's Apprentice. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. And then also, just this past week on a show I've never heard of called Warehouse 13, apparently in that, there's also Magic is prominently shown in a card store. So for you guys, what do you think of Magic? And it has to do this at some point, but kind of bridging more into the mainstream.
I don't have so much of a problem with it, as long as they keep respect to like what the game is and like I guess like the flavor and everything of the game. I really don't want it to devolve into just like advertisers handling it kind of ham-fistedly as, oh, look, here's a bunch of guys playing a card game that has wizards and dragons and other stuff in it. I mean, as long as it treats both the player base and the game respectfully, I don't really care where Hasbro throws the product in. And actually, my dad mentioned that where it was on Warehouse 13. He was like, oh, there's the game that you play with your friends. Yeah, anyways. But as long as they show respect for the game, I mean, I don't care. Because, you know, it's, you already feel kind of like a nerd playing Magic anyways, and you don't want to be any more embarrassed than you already are.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really, Tom? Really.
Yeah, like, I feel so manly about playing Magic, I feel like the art on Thrall Retainer.
Ooh.
Go look up that art right now.
Oh, I am. Hear the clacking of my keys.
Yeah, it's from Fallen Empires. Gavin, do you remember the art for Thrall Retainer off the top of your head?
I remember one of the arts for Thrall Retainer, but there were three of them because it was Fallen Empires.
So. Wow. Okay, yeah, that's pretty manly, Tom. Now, are you the one that's being held in chains and being pressed against a wall, or the guy, like, holding up his hands and claws?
I'm the one that looks like he has big cojones.
Oh, well. All right, well, I agree. That looks like every picture I've seen of you.
Yep, okay. In my prior career, yes.
Well, moving on to other topics. Or not really. Staying on the topic we were originally on. I feel like this is really good for Magic. Because I think that the game has gotten to a point where it can support itself, and all that's left to do is expand your player base. And what they've been trying to do is, you know, acquire more players, and they've really started to do a good job on that. M10 was an incredible step in that direction. M11 only promises to capitalize on that further. And so this cross-promotional stuff I think is really good. I think, you know, Wizards is handling it. They know what's going into things. So, they're, you know, it's not just going to, you know, stereotype people or show up in a bad way. And I think, you know, this is the genesis of something that could be really big. I think that it just takes a little bit of push, you know, shows up as something important in one movie, and people will start to recognize it more.
See, and that's why, I mean, they just need to go all the way. They should have had a cross-promotion with, like, Sex and the City 2. I mean, boom, get that Wii market.
Oh, baby, you just make my life counter rise.
If I see Sarah Jessica Parker play Magic, I want to try to play Magic.
Yeah, but then we would have a bunch of mid-range 30-year-old women, and that would be awkward.
That would be fantastic. That would make F&Ms that much, it'd almost be like, you know, you're not sure who you're going to go home with
night. Oh, my God.
But after
you're
an
right.
F&M.
Yes.
So don't ever question me again about that.
No, Tom, you're brilliant. I'll
yes,
take it back.
Yes, I am. And it's, you know, if they're a successful late 30s-year-old woman, they're going to have their own car, and, you know, they can support you.
And, you know, maybe they like young, nubile, neck-bearded young men like myself.
They probably do. This sounds like a win-win. I already hear Jack calculating how he's going to have this happen for Sex and the City 3.
No. I mean, that would require some kind of subverted, underhand deal, and that would just be wrong.
Or if you want to go totally the other end of the spectrum, you go with Twilight.
No,
at least there's vampires and werewolves.
It would fit thematically, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Gavin is now wishing he never came back to this podcast ever again.
I feel like I'm Teferi in the time spiral block. Like, I phased out, you know, things were kind of going okay. Like, there's a war with Phyrexia, but I mean, whatever. And I come back, and like, everything is just different. It's just a desolate wasteland.
We're thinking outside the box now, Gavin. It's tough to get used to that. We're just thinking outside the box now. So the other couple of things we have is, when we talk about the Sorcerer's Apprentice, they had this share magic with your friends for probably the most boring contest title ever. But basically, you could make a deck featuring one of the new Planeswalkers, or not new, but the new M11 Planeswalkers that they're being reprinted. And they published the winners for that. And I was a little upset. I thought there'd be at least one Frost Titan in a deck somewhere, and there was absolutely none. Because my 40 Frost Titans and 4 Krakeni decks did not apparently make it as a winner. I thought I'd at least get like a booby prize or something. Did you guys submit any decks to this at all?
No, I was hoping you would carry the banner for the show there.
Yeah, it was 40 Frost Titans, 4 Kraken's Eyes, and 26 Islands. That was the deck I submitted.
But Tom, there's no Planeswalkers there.
I know!
John, Tom, that's 70 cards.
Oh, I know. I wanted to see if I would get a response.
We'll see, Gavin. We're actually aiming for the casual market there.
Yeah, think of how many packs they would sell. People would say, like, I really want to make that 40 Frost Titan card deck. That's a lot of rares.
I briefly considered entering this contest, but I just didn't get around to it. And by didn't get around to it, I mean I just didn't really ever consider it beyond the first couple of seconds. I think it's really cool for the market that they're targeting. It's, you know, just having free times like this is always a good thing, right? It's just a win-win for players because it gives them something to focus on and share with everybody else. And in return, you know, Wizards, like, you know, helps them out a little bit. So I think stuff like this is good for the game.
Now, are you excluded from contests once you become, like, a pro tour player? Oh, okay.
No, you can... There's no contest exclusion. If you worked at Wizards, of course, you wouldn't.
Working at Wizards, you can't, but if you're a pro tour player, that's okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's no problem with that. But at the same time, like, I love their contests, and some of them definitely interest me, but I feel like people who, you know, really want them should probably try and enter them as opposed to someone like me. I'm like, you know, I could use these packs or whatever, or this fat pack, but I'm not going to enjoy it as much as someone who, you know, really put the time into Tuna Casual deck and sends it in and wins them.
The last little few, again, for kind of cross-promotion we have, and this has been going on for a little while, this started with the Frag Dolls, is you can play Duels of the Planeswalkers, came on Xbox Live Arcade first. You can play this online through Xbox Live Gold, if you have a Gold membership, versus, I call it celebrities. They start with Frag Dolls, which I thought was a very interesting one to start with. And the one that's going to be latest is July 23rd, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can play against the writers of Robot Chicken, who are well known to be fans of the game Magic.
Yeah, they've actually had them gunslinging. I think at like Pro Tour San Diego, they were there to gunsling. So
I think that one's pretty cool. That one, you know, it's cool, Robot Chicken. Everybody likes Robot Chicken. They actually play Magic. You're not recruiting some, you know, scantily clad PC video game playing women, and hopefully that they know how to play Magic and have them show up. These guys have liked Magic from before, and they can help kind of further promote the game. And that seems like a really good fit.
Plus, I mean, any exposure for Seth Green is always good.
Yes, well,
it's not like he's on the new Dragon Warrior ad or anything.
I haven't got to see that. I know he is on the ads, but I haven't actually gotten to watch one yet.
Oh, they're insane, because he just appears off-panel out of nowhere, and he's like, ha ha ha, but when you play Dragon Warrior, blah 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 blah.
And I did,
sounds like an Old Spice commercial. Speaking of which, did you guys see all the Old Spice Twitter stuff?
Oh, yeah, that was amazing.
No, what is this about?
Tom has been out of the E loop.
I was in Newport, South Dakota for a while, so yes.
And before that, there was the legendary bachelor party you attended. So anyways, okay.
That was two in a row, actually.
Oh, God. Why did you do that to yourself? Isaiah Mustafa, a.k.a. the Old Spice guy, had it where you could write the Old Spice character on Twitter, right? And he would send you post a personal video responding to your tweet.
Didn't he get like 35,000 of these? Like, how does he make this many videos?
He didn't sleep and he never wore a shirt.
So what I read up a bunch on this, and what happened is they ended up with, I think, around 150 or 200 responses. And what they didn't do it to everybody, but they did it to people who either had really good, lines or celebrities to help like boost the media image. But yeah, they flew him out and a bunch of like screenwriters and set designers to this place in undisclosed place in Oregon. And for 2 days straight, with, you know, a little bit of sleep break in between, they just recorded videos. They're all available on YouTube. And yeah, I just did it in response to Twitter. There's a lot of pretty good ones on there. But
really?
Anyway, I thought it was a really, really cool marketing thing, yeah.
Oh, that sounds kind of fascinating. You wonder when they're going to, you know, it seems like Magic's starting to step in that direction, where they're starting to get these more interesting promotions and maybe, and really liking to get feedback from players. I'm trying to think how they could possibly do something like this.
They have been doing the surveys at the end of some of the columns lately, and that has been reflected in the game elsewhere.
I was thinking like almost like they need help for TV ads. Like, they've had a couple of TV ads that have been decent, but in general, I can't say that they've ever really struck home with me.
Yeah, I think that the TV audience is a difficult one, because when you see, if you're, imagine for a second, you don't know what Magic is, right? And you're watching Cartoon Network, and a Magic ad comes on.
I'm thinking Satan already. Okay.
Well, the issue is something like, it kind of comes off as, you know, like an action figure Mattel commercial, or Hasbro commercial or whatever. And I feel like it doesn't attract people, because it's really hard to explain what's going on in, you know, the 20 seconds, 30 seconds you get. And it also costs a lot of money to make a commercial. Or with something like, say, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, you don't have to like advertise it and like brutally jam into people's heads what's going on.
I prefer to be brutally jammed in my head.
You can have it in the background and people just kind of will take notice of it. And then, you know, it's just that brand recognition that you have to build up. And then once you have the brand recognition, you can run commercials that people are more interested in. It's just a step of getting to that point. There have been some good Magic commercials in the past, but there have also been some not so good ones. There have also been some ideas that I think that are hilarious, but that were never used.
Like the puppet commercial, that was pretty bad.
The puppet commercial was bad, but I mean, there's just some, you know, like the Here I Rule ads were not particularly great. But on the flip side, I thought that there were some cool Portal ads. Like when Portal was released, all you need is you, your deck, and a friend, or your brain, your deck, and a friend. Like, it's just a matter of taking it in the right direction. But I think the first step is to build that brand recognition. And just by having it in things, letting people understand what it is, or, you know, kind of what's going on, just giving an idea of what it is, then you can slowly, you know, do commercials over time. I think Magic is headed in a phenomenal direction right now. And you just have to give it time. The game is going to be here for a while, so you just have to give it, you know, the couple of years it takes to snowball this. And then before you know it, you can have this kind of mainstream additions.
You bring up a really interesting point, Gavin. Do you feel like this is a time, the iron is hot right now, for us to see something like a Portal 3? Where, like you said, Wizards is trying to acquisition new players.
I don't think so. I don't think we'll see a Portal 4 because Portal was never that popular to begin with. And I think it's actually pretty much regarded as kind of like a failure because it didn't really introduce players to the game that well. There's confusion because they use different terms. I think what the modern day Portal is stuff something like M10 or M11.
It's the core game. Set.
Yeah, it's a core set. It's still pretty simple, and it's the same game. As opposed to Portal, there's just tons of confusion about, you know, the difference between the games and, you know, some of the cards are worded differently with stuff like intercept and attack and defense and etc. So I don't think we'll ever see another Portal again. But I think that, you know, what they've done with the core set is kind of reimagine the Portal universe. So, you know, you can attract people in that way without losing the fact that it's, you know, part of the Magic base set and it works in well there.
And I guess there's the Deck Builder's Toolkit as well. It's one of the newer things. Really designed at a player who's just getting into the game and how to get going to that constructed, to think of this as being a collectible card game. That you need to get cards and keep getting new stuff.
Yeah, Deck Builder's Toolkit is amazing because you get a lot of cards for the value. You get a lot of basic lands for the value, which is always something you're looking for when you're a brand new player. And it's it just, you know, teaches you some, you know, basics about deck construction, gives you some jumping off points, shows you a lot of different cards, and doesn't cost that much, so it's easy to quickly get into. I think pretty much all of the marketing things which just has been doing in the past couple of years have been awesome, with the exception of maybe the foil booster packs. I don't think those panned out as well as they could have. I think there were a lot of issues. They weren't necessarily a bad idea, but I just think there were a lot of issues that just made them not as desirable as it could have been. And the same kind of thing goes for the 6 or 8 card booster packs we saw at one point.
I never actually saw one of those in the wild, but I remember you actually talking about them.
Yeah, I think those were also actually a very good idea, which actually, you know, tied into the right kind of market. But I also know those weren't very successful. And, you know, just due to various factors. I think those were the two things that, you know, maybe didn't work out as well, but everything else, you know, From the Vault, Deck Builder's Toolkit, the dual decks, right? Like, those are just, there are others too. They've just all been incredible for the game. And this promotional stuff is great. I think the game is just heading in an awesome direction. And I'm really thrilled that Magic has, you know, just started to soar like an angel.
So. Wow. You're very poetic tonight, Gavin. I mean, I miss this. I still remember an episode, this was probably like a year and a half ago, where you mentioned about, like, you were burning your leg hairs to, like, summon an Ifrit or something. That's still one of my all-time favorite quotes.
You send your leg hairs to summon an Ifrit.
Yeah, that's still one of my all-time favorite quotes from you.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard, is Rocket still doing okay?
Yeah, no, I mean, Rocket's live and kicking. You can't hear
him
anymore.
Oh, okay, good. I was a little worried. I haven't heard him. I'm like, uh-oh. I mean...
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm living on my own, so he's not here with me.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if Rocket was, like, your bird or, like, the family's bird or...
I think he was supposed to be my bird, however...
But he'll probably live longer than you will, so that gets a little tough.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be alive for a while.
And yet another place you're going to be able to see some Magic is Dragon Con. And I've heard of Dragon Con. I didn't know exactly what it was. If you read their press release, they are the largest multimedia popular culture convention in the U.S., and they're having a new partnership to bring Magic the Gathering events to Dragon Con. And the one that they mention is that they're going to be having a one-of-a-kind Rochester draft of all the cards found in Zendikar, Worldwake, and Rise of the Eldrazi. There's also going to be endless drafts, tournaments for complete sets of foils, free casual learn-to-play events. There's going to be full judges and full staff. So it sounds like they're really doing a pretty big push at Dragon Con this year for Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, and once again, this is just another great thing that's happening. I mean, they're just slowly expanding into more conventions and running really cool events. You know, I'm sure there'll be everything from Arch Enemy and Plane Chase, which is another one of the great products that they've released in the past couple of years. You know, all the way up to, you know, just booster drafts and, you know, side constructed tournaments for the more competitive players. So it's just great all the way around, and it's exciting to see stuff like this.
The one thing is when people hear about Wizards, you know, it's a business, they need to be getting new players, you know, make the game healthy. But do you feel like this is going to somehow change Magic in the long run? Because even if you go back to Alpha and Beta, Magic in a lot of ways is still the exact same game. Yeah,
I think
and creatures, you're buying packs, we get 3 to 4 sets a year. It really feels like, I'm not sure, like, how are they really going to change the game, or do they not need to?
Well, I don't really think they need to. They made some subtle changes, like they added Mythic Rarity, for example. You know, they added your basic land in all the booster packs, some of the M10 changes. But overall, I don't think the game needs to change that much. The design is good. I think that the actual game and the way that they're working on it is phenomenal. They have a crack team of designers that are great, doing a fantastic job of keeping the game alive. I think a lot of it is up to the marketing and PR team and how, you know, where their events are at, who they have relations with, and what shows and stuff, you know, the game shows up on. I think that's where the core is. Stuff like Duels of the Planeswalkers, you know, expanding the media outreach. Hopefully Magic the Gathering Tactics will take it a step further.
That's true.
And I think that's all the stuff that is key. I think as far as actual game mechanics go, they've been doing a great job for a long time.
But it's almost, we're kind of getting new ways to consume the game Magic, like Duels of the Planeswalkers.
It's like, you know, you go to McDonald's, right? I hate this example because it's McDonald's and they're gross, but just bear with
me. I go to McDonald's probably like 3 times a week, so that's okay.
But you go to McDonald's and you can get a cheeseburger. You get the same Big Mac, right? You've got the same Big Mac, you know, 6 years or so. And it hasn't really changed that much, or sometimes, you know, and some years the beef patties are bigger, and some years the beef patties are smaller, or whatever.
Sometimes they're made of endangered animals, you know, whatever it is. They
right.
Bald eagles.
It is bald eagles.
It's always changing. So the promotion is always getting larger. You know, the box changes. You know, they have the Monopoly promotion sometimes.
Oh, it's like crack. It is like a pot. Yeah, it's just like a pot crack brownie.
Right. So, I mean, over time, you know, the marketing changes, even though at the core, what you've come to expect stays the same. You attract more people in that way. You build the brand recognition. And that's kind of a weird analogy to Magic, but that's kind of where I see Magic is. The game is very good. The mechanics are solid. They can tweak a couple things here and there to change up the game. But most of all, I think a lot of it just falls on the PR and marketing people. The designers have done an amazing job. When you just consider that, you know, a little under 20 years ago, there was absolutely nothing like on this. And, you know, when they put out Magic, they had no idea about how to balance games or, you know, basic, you know, Magic game theory and stuff like that. And in such a short amount of time, they have design almost down to, like, a creative science, which is amazing.
I've got to agree with Gavin on this, because everything they're doing right now is to actively attract people to the game. And, I mean, Tom, or Gavin, when have new players to the game ever been a bad thing, right?
Right. New players are always just good for everybody.
Right, and not just for the health of the game, but also in that they give more input to Wizards, and that turns around in better quality cards and a better competitive environment and a better casual environment.
Like, I don't want a little photocopied manual in my deck box.
No, I mean,
I need more than that.
And, I mean, like, especially, like, I actually picked up an intro pack today simply because it had a full Conundrum Sphinx. Yes, I'm greedy like that. I'm sorry. But the two pamphlets that came with it, like the How to Play pamphlet and the, oh, you were a Planeswalker pamphlet, they were very intuitive and very easy to follow. And, I mean, that wouldn't have been possible without tons of input from the players. And I think a lot of that has to do with more people playing Magic now.
Yeah, no more attacking people's lands and stuff like you used to.
I don't know what you're talking about, Tom.
When you learned, like, back in the Alpha Beta Limited days, when you learned to play out of that little photocopied microfiche rulebook that came in the starter box, it was almost like dialects. Everybody was playing Magic, but it wasn't the same game of Magic.
Oh, when you go to your first tournament and you realize that not everybody just dumps all their lands in their opening hands like you and your friends do, oh, the Magic dies then.
Yes,
a lot
exactly.
of Magic leaves the world.
And it's like every game where part of that was a little bit of the spice of Magic at that time. That's what made it so it was unique, because it was the first collectible card game. Like Gavin said, this was new territory. Nobody had ever done this before. It was wild country. A lot of mistakes were made. And now the game's been refined, where overall it is such a better game than it was back then. There's no argument.
Well, I mean, Healing Solve and Ancestral Recall, that seemed like a balanced cycle to me.
Yes. You know, it's threes of something. Three life versus three cards at instant speed. One of these panned out to be a little bit better than the other one. But no, I mean, it seems like Magic is at its all-time healthiest. Hasbro always is announcing different earnings calls, and Magic teams to do well. I'm guessing M11 is going to do just as well as M10, because I would say the feedback we've gotten from listeners is that they like M11 more than they've liked M10.
I think it's going to do even better. I mean, people, like, they actually looked forward to this core set. Tom, doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah, when they did the M10 changes, like, when you ask people about, like, think of, like 8th edition, 8th or 9th edition, people would rather, like, pooped in their hand and eaten it than buy a pack of 9th. But now people actually want to go play Limited with the core set, and you're excited for it. At some point, I'm waiting for the day when we're going to get, like a From the Vaults whiteboarded set, where it's going to be just all whiteboarded foil cards. And that's going to be
Wizard
amazing.
I don't think Wizard hates us that much, really.
And that would be amazing. It'd be like, I've never seen a whiteboarded card. That's really cool.
And can you imagine, like, pulling your cards out in front of your kids and being like, this is how Magic cards used to look, and you show them, you know, the pre-mirrored-in card frame. And they're like, wow, I can't believe cards used to look like this.
What I hope
is
that,
so
that they keep it the same, but it's like, when the Nintendo comes out with the 3DS, is that we're going to get Magic cards with, like, the lenticular thing on so they can move, you know, like the kittens hanging from a branch. So when I attack my card, when I tap it and rotate 90 degrees, the picture's actually going to change.
Well, you know, some artists actually do the 3D work on some cards now, don't you, Tom?
Oh, yeah, where they stack them and kind of do their own job.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of cool, in my opinion.
But I want to see this, like, coming, like, out of the pack that way.
Ooh.
Like, I don't know, Magic Eye or something. It seems like there's other ways they could, I don't know, make it appeal. Because now Magic's competing with things like movies and 360 and PS3, and now all these things are going to be 3D and, you know, the
moving.
I can't tell my mom standing next to the TV. I can't tell which is more real, what I'm playing, you know, what alien I'm shooting, or my mom, because the graphics are that good now. It seems like at some point we're going to be seeing maybe some interesting ways for them to kind of spruce up the... Because a basic Magic card is a two-dimensional flat piece of paper.
So I can see that as like a promotional kind of thing. Like, I don't know, From the Vaults 3D. You know, something like that. But I think that at its core, that's kind of a gimmicky thing that doesn't really grab your attention. I think, you know, Magic's got a very good system with, you know, normal cards and foils, and doesn't need layers of, like, you know, normal card, foil rare, you know, raw, crazy 3D rare.
yeah, we need a hollow 3D rare.
Right.
That
like,
excites me.
I feel like they have that system down pretty good. And I feel like if you just add one on top of that, it just feels more and more gimmicky. I mean, I think Mythic Rares are good for the game, but, you know, there's already been enough, like, stuff to come out of that that's made people dubious. I don't feel like 3D Rares necessarily, or 3D Mythic Rares, or 3D Foil Rares, or whatever, will attract that many people.
Well, I mean, like, maybe make all the cards 3D. Not, like, have it be a special thing, but, like, almost so like when they update the card frame.
100 years, then we'll talk.
In 100 years, we'll have 3D cards. We're going to be playing holographic chess like they do in Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that when that happens, it'll be in a time where that's just the norm. Like, you pick up your newspaper, and it's like a Harry Potter newspaper. You expect the images to move.
Don't you see that? Doesn't that look so cool in the movies when they have that? And that's why I first saw an iPad, and there's an interactive textbook for the periodic table that's somewhat like that, where you can rotate things, and, oh, that made me want to go back to school.
And I think that, like, when that happens, when moving images are the norm, and, like, when the technology comes out to do it cheaply and effectively, that's when we might see something like that. But for now, there's no reason for them to put in the very expensive resources it takes to make them.
Oh, gosh. Could you guys see a warning label on the side of the pack there that says, if you have any sort of heart condition or are easily excited, please do not buy this product?
Yeah, just, like, barfing on your cards. And I am imagining, like, now that we're getting more touchscreen displays, though, that would make, whenever they come out with version 4 of MTGO, if you could have, like a touch interface with that, that would be fantastic.
My laptop screen would look so miserable, Tom.
Because like, all these all right, smears and for me it'd be popcorn butter on there. And
it's not quite the same when you can't hold the cards, right? Because the tactile sensation of holding cards and like snapping them into play or whatever is, you know, a very specific thing. But dragging them around a screen, you know, with your fingers doesn't quite have the same kind of appeal to it. You kind of feel like you're doing that with a mouse and a clicker.
Yeah, but it kind of be that it'd be a step towards the middle. It would be more than just, you know, with my Xbox 360 controller, you know, hitting green A to tap it.
Sure, you want more like a Wii kind of.
Yeah, or like the Kinect. I can just flail around and have a seizure in front of my TV and shuffle my cards that way by doing jumping jacks. So
yeah,
again,
athletic Magic where you have to keep active.
Yeah, they can have you use that Wii Vitality sensor where if your heart rate drops to like 100, you lose life points or something like that.
No, you just start drawing lands. Like you only draw, you start drawing lands or spells depending on if your mana screen.
Jack, your XMTG comic, the table on two treadmills.
Or even better, like if you start losing life, a UFC cage fighter comes and punches you in the stomach.
he just slowly gets closer and closer to you. And just
Is this Rampage? Oh god!
Remember when we were talking about things that were on topic? Let's talk about Magic.
Yeah, most of this was all Magic related, so I think it's good. But we'll go on to our next part of the show. This is what you've been playing. And Gavin, we haven't had you for a while. So do you want to start off what you've been playing? You can go through a favorite deck or a deck of your whatever you want. Or just utter silence.
Well, how about instead of what have I been playing, I'll say what card I have been playing. The card I have been playing the most in the past 2 weeks has been Destructive Force.
Is that the new Wildfire?
It's Wilder Fire, Wild Fiver, whatever you want to call it.
Wild Fiver. Ooh, show title.
Ever since I saw that card, I was like, this card is awesome. So I have, you know, like 4 or 5 different decks just sitting on my desktop that I've been working on using the card. I think it's just awesome and standard right now because a lot of people have these expensive mana constraints. They want to hit a certain amount of lands. They want to be able to activate the man lands. They want to do this and that. And if you just constrain their resources or, you know, use a Planeswalker after Destructive Force to take advantage of things, the card is just so well positioned. I mean, it kills practically everything you want to kill.
It does do the magical 5 damage.
Yeah, it does do magical 5 damage. It even takes down Baneslayer. The one issue, of course, is you can't hit Planeswalkers with it. So if your opponent has a Planeswalker, you can put you in kind of a rough spot, but you just have to, you know, regress it or whatever to deal with it. That's the card I've been playing lately. I've got, you know, 5 or so decks that use it. Otherwise, I've been playing, you know, M11 Limited. It's actually really interesting because M11 is the format for both M11 Draft is the format for both Nationals and the Pro Tour. And in previous years, you know, we haven't ever used Corset in a Nationals draft or a Pro Tour draft. So it's going to be a very important format to know. So I've been working on that, and that's been a lot of fun. This sets plays out pretty well. Limited Scry is such a great mechanic. Also, never pass Crystal Ball. The card is like unbeatable.
Yeah, we mentioned when we first started going through when the M11 spoilers started to come out that we all love that card. Repeatable Colorless Scry is amazing.
I mean, you look at it, right, and you're like, oh, this card's pretty good. Like, or it could be okay. Like, it might be a little slower, clunky, or whatever. And I don't know about Constructed, but in Limited, it's so hard to beat that card. It is just ridiculously hard to beat that card. Your opponent always gets the card they want. They put the ones they don't want on the bottom. Every time my opponent like uses Crystal Ball two or three times, it's just impossible to win at that point. Like, their cards are just going to be so much better than yours.
And we've already talked about the EDH love for Crystal Ball, because that will go in pretty much every deck automatically.
So, I mean, I was at the GPT last weekend, and my opponent cast a Crystal Ball, and I was ridiculously far ahead. But within just a couple turns, you know, he was putting cards on the bottom, putting good ones on the top, drawing them. You know, he just was like, all right, sleep, attack, you, fireball you. He was like, yep, just Crystal Ball found me everything I needed. So it just finds you your best cards. And in a core set format, really what you want to do is just find your best cards.
And now, have you had the same feeling? We've had a lot of feedback that people love M11 Limited, but they felt as... And this is the same way for Sealed in a lot of ways, but even more bomb-heavy than usual.
Everybody says that about every single Limited format ever. Sealed feels bomby. And you know what? Because Sealed does have bombs, and the games go a little longer, so the bombs matter. But I think that the M11 actually does a better job of dealing with, you know, bombs than other formats have. You do have a lot of good common ways to deal with large creatures. You know, you've got a lot of counter magic to hit things like Fireball or Sleep or whatever. I think it's actually pretty balanced. Your opponent has to Grave Titan sometimes, but there have to always be good cards like that. I mean, you can't make a set without any bombs whatsoever.
I say even Fallen Empires had a couple of bombs.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you played your Night Soil and they were just done, right?
Oh, that is still a card that actually was so much better than people ever gave it credit for.
I know, right? When I saw Night Soil for the first time, I was like, obviously, like, I wasn't necessarily a tournament player, but I saw it and I was like, this card's incredible. You can remove cards in their graveyard and get 1/1 tokens? Like, just think about that.
Yeah, because a lot of times in big multiplayer games, is reanimation is a very common game mechanic. Sure. Pretty much every deck can have some sort of reanimation thing, and when you can counter that for a bonus, awesome.
Right, I mean, and also just like a very low cost investment, and in a game where, you know, it'll go long over time, like in multiplayer, you just get such incremental advantage out of it. You could easily over the course of the game get 10 or more tokens from it.
So Jack, what about you? Do you have Night Soil in any of your decks you're gonna be talking about?
I don't even know what that card does.
Know Night Soil?
No, man, no. I mean, there's 1,100,000,000 cards in MTG, Tom.
Okay, Theater of the Mind, Jack. You know, just relax it back. I'm going to read to you Night Soil.
I'm going to sip my coffee as you do this.
So this is, just to set the mood, this is a C1 common, because we're talking Fallen Empires.
I love the voice you've adapted now.
I know. This is the sexy voice.
This is movie narrator voice.
Movie narrator voice. So Night Soil. Enchantment. It's 2 green, so GG. 1 colorless mana.
It's just that.
What's that? Just that. It's just an enchantment. It does nothing. It gives you a permanent.
Fallen Empires, that makes perfect sense.
No. I was going to say, you know, GG, it's a really good game, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, it is a good game. For 1 colorless mana, you exile 2 creature cards from a single graveyard, : put a 1/1 green sapperling creature token onto the battlefield.
Wow, that's really not that bad.
With the flavor text, that's even good. Some said killing the Thalids only encouraged them.
Ooh. Wow, I like that. That's pretty cool. I guess you're right, Tom. Not all cards out of Fallen Empire sucked.
Yeah, I mean, and you can get it for about 9 cents.
Him to Turak. So.
Yeah, him to Turak.
Do you still remember when Autumn Willow was like the card to get out of that set? When it first came out, Autumn Willow was the bomb.
I mean, I didn't experience it personally, but I know that, yeah, that was the case.
It's really embarrassing.
I mean, how are we going to beat that card? Like, the only way to beat it is, like, Wrath of God. And if you want to play that, you have to destroy all your own creatures.
Yeah, and then they print, like, Deadly Insects not too much after that, and you're just like, aw. It's, like, pretty much the same thing.
Well, I've actually not been having fun playing Magic because I've been making other people not have fun playing Magic.
I've been reading your Twitter feed about you making people concede. That's all I know.
Yeah. The infamous favorite deck of mine, who I won't mention because I've already mentioned it too many times on this
cast. Should I say it for you? Two scoops?
Oh, yeah. There you go. Well, I got really bored the other day, and like because of finals, I've just been trying to attempt to find some way to de-stress. I was like, I'll get on Magic Workstation to make people's lives miserable. So I made Two Scoops 2.0, right? And it's got Cryptic Command and Deprive, Una's Grace. Yes. I ended up cutting Obelisk of Alara simply because it was not needed. Esper Charm, Story Circle, and Ruined Halo. And that's the deck. Like, that is the entire strategy. Oh, and it's got Mistvale Plains. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so what I would do is I would get out Ruined Halo, naming any sort of, like, discard or anything like that, and then Story Circle naming their main color, and then if I get another one, like, their secondary color. And 90% of the time, people would not realize what was going on. Like, the whole purpose of the deck was we sat there and I milled you one card at a time via Una's Grace, and I would put the land that I used to mill you via the retrace ability on the bottom of my library, so I would never actually mill myself out, and I would always have more cards than my opponent. And I would do this over and over and over again, and people would just, like, they wouldn't figure out what the purpose of the deck was, and I always knew when they finally were ready to rage quit, when they would reveal their hand and be like, oh, if I only had this, player lost. It was brilliant. Like, I mean, there is nothing as fun as making somebody rage quit a game of Magic.
So is this totally just on MTGO then?
No, this actually isn't on MTGO. This is on Magic Workstation.
Oh, excuse me. Okay, you said that. You're right.
Yeah, I'm totally cheap. And I did say that. Oh, forgive me. And also, like, I went the extra mile on being an evil player, and I would say a very, very casual game only.
You are it.
Oh, but I had so much fun. Oh, it was so great.
Hey, you built yourself up for the beginning of the show, and I like you, and then you just totally tank it. You should buy this part of this time of the show.
But I mean, that's not as bad as me testing Vendilion Click and Elder Dragon Highlander.
No, that's true. I don't even let you talk about EDH anymore because you just make me mad, like, every time you talk.
Why do I make you mad, though?
Oh, here's my Rhystic Study. Ooh, copy enchantment.
No, actually, I don't do any dirty tricks like that. I do. I have done
only
Buried Alive.
Clean tricks.
Yeah, I only do clean tricks.
That's the only kind you want to pay for, yeah.
Not totally behind the truck stop, just around it. No, like, I would do, like, Buried Alive into Magister Sphinx and then resurrect it the next turn with Shroom.
Yeah, you said Shroom and EDH. I don't care what you're doing because you have the potential for doing shenanigans that I don't want to see.
Well, I mean, I have a fun deck. It's Worth the Raid Mother.
Okay, that one's better.
Yeah, and now that deck, like, that's very, it's extremely draw-dependent because, like, I can get a lot of land destruction effects very early, or I can even possibly storm out with, like, Empty the Warrens and then top Skullclamp, right, and draw out half my deck and win anyways. But then there are times when I get, like, 30 lands in a row, and that's not fun.
And I started putting together my Patron of the Nozomi EDH deck, which has been quite much fun. And I was also interested, I had to read a little bit about the rules, about how it works for things like Ninjutsu and Generals. And I also now know that you can't use Ninjutsu if it's on your general, because it's not considered in your hand.
Ooh.
So I learned that.
The more that makes sense, I guess.
It does. I just wanted to double check, because I assume people would be abusing this if it hadn't been already specified, and it had been. So that's why I had to put Patron the Nozomi as my general. Then I can just put Inkai's actually in my deck, because I am playing Rat Tribal EDH, and that makes me happy inside. And we were talking about before the show, I the combo I'm waiting to at least use at least one time is Crypt Rats and Basilisk Caller. Just be like, take it. 1 point of damage. Bang. Oh, does my guy have lifelink? Suck it. I can't wait.
You're as casual as a worn pair of shorts.
And there's just some interesting rat cards that I had forgotten about, like Meronar. I had forgotten about Meronar.
Oh, everyone in my store loves Meronar.
It's for people that don't know, 2BC3CS is a legendary rat rogue, and a lot of rats actually are rogue, so you can actually use some of the rogue spells if you want. 2/3.
Noggin Whack, yeah.
Exactly. Especially if you're playing Mono Black, Noggin Whack is kind of your one choice. All rats have fear. Has the ability of tap, sack a rat, put X 1/1 black rat creature tokens into play, where X is the number of rats you control. This is where I wish there was somehow like a blue-black rat general that I could use, so you could throw in something like Faces of the Past, or when a rat goes into the graveyard, you untap all the other rats, and then you just go nuts for infinite rat tokens.
Sig, River, Mickey Mouse, Guardian?
Oh, yeah, you could pick any random blue-black legend, but I wish there was an actual rat-themed one that I could go with. So I'm trying to keep it flavorful as much as I can. Like using destroy spells like befoul, because rats befoul things.
Ho-ho-ho.
So, guys, we're talking about this again before the show. We're like teenage girls. We talk for about 3 hours before we actually start the show. We love getting emails. But we also have to be honest, we're getting to the point that we get enough emails that we're right on that edge where I can't read all of them. Because we almost need two podcasts, Monday Night Magic and then the Monday Night Magic emails.
Remember when voicemails used to get that way?
Yeah, and voicemails, we've had some people emailing about why we don't do those anymore. It was solely that it was a pain in my backside. Because somehow when we're recording the show, we're all recording remotely. I had to broadcast the call so we could all hear it, and then somehow also put it into the recording for the show, and it was causing me stress and ulcers. And when you have that first bloody bowel movement, you say, that's enough of this stuff. I need to simplify my life. So that's why we got rid of voicemails. And now emails, we love to get them, and I respond to every single one that I get. But we may have to do it where not every single one gets read on the show. So I hope we don't go from having lots of emails to none. But I just want to let people know, if you don't hear your email read specifically on the show, I will always respond. But it may not be read directly on the show. What do you guys think of that?
I completely agree, because there's a lot of times I get emailed, and I actually carry out a lot of our correspondence with, or at least my personal correspondence with listeners via email. I know there's been times before I said I would mention it on the show or something, and for anybody that I've said that to, I apologize. It's just simply, it's very hectic trying to get the show together for all of us in a week. And yeah, I totally agree to that. I always strive to at least try and send somebody an email back. So yeah, I second this decision entirely.
What about you, Gavin? You're back. You're part of the family again. Are you comfortable with this declaration?
Rephrase the declaration.
I will respond to every email that I get for Monday Night Magic, but I may not read every single email on the show.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, as long as we, you know, be like Mark Rosewater and reply to them. I just feel bad if someone would email us and then we'd never email back to them, because I feel bad when emails get lost into the abyss. But yeah, as long as we reply, then we could, you know, save the choicest bits to read on the show.
And in my way to say we love the emails, keep them coming, is we're going to bribe you, because I find bribes work well for children and old people. So we're going to be having another contest. So we're going to be giving away a bunch of free stuff. And I think the contest idea is really cool. Jack totally tried to shoot me down at the beginning of the show.
Your idea
sucks,
Tom. As soon as
Tom
told me this.
I didn't say it sucked. I just said I had a slightly better idea. But, you know, Tom, I have to admit, using your very persuasive voice you used earlier, and also having Gavin along to help you convince me, I've got to say, this is probably one of the best contests we've ever had.
So should we just announce a concept before the contest, before the emails? Should we just jump ahead a little bit?
Yeah, let's do that.
So we'll let this run for, we'll say, 3 weeks. I think people actually want to spend a little bit of time planning this one. This is not a card creation contest. I know some people feel a little left out on those. This one, where if you can write or type, you can enter this. You can enter this contest.
And thinking is useful.
And thinking, yes, because there has to be a little bit of planning behind this. So our contest is create your own From the Vault set. So we got 15 cards with some sort of underlying theme to them, and this is where I hand it off to you. You can have it be. You know, we have some examples. We have Exiled, Relics, Dragons. You could have a From the Vaults of all your favorite commons. Or From the Vaults with all your favorite big hooter chicks on it. Whatever you want for this, that can be your From the Vault set. Mine, you could be all imp cards. You know, whatever you want to do.
From the Vault's oozes, right?
Yeah, From the Vault oozes, which would be amazing.
From the Vault poison.
Oh, Gavin.
Gavin's really going for it tonight.
Oh, my God. I'm typing that. I need to see how many cards with poison we have. Poison. We have 11 cards. Damn it. One of those is leeches.
They just preview some from future sets, so it's okay.
That's right. Do we want to make people have to make up one card from Scars of Mirrodin, or should we just say, you pick 15 cards?
Just leave it open. Just leave it open.
Oh, I forgot about March Leeches. Oh, I forgot about some of these good cards. Marsh Viper. Oh, I love it. Oh, sorry, guys. I'm reading this. This is bringing me back.
Oh, take your time, buddy. I mean,
Virulent Sliver. There's another one. Sliver Kids. There you go.
Snake Cult Initiation.
So all we need to do is, so you create your own From the Vault set. We'll have a link in the show notes. We'll have you post in the MTGCast forum, so it'll be a very easy to find spot for that linked in the show notes. So just write down your 15 cards, and may it come with a name, be From the Vault Oozes or whatever it is, and what the theme is. And we'll be giving away a big bunch of prize packs here, so let me run through that. As you can tell, this is all the stuff I've accumulated over the last couple of months to give away. So it's very, very random. We talked about this before. We have the very nice prize pack from Jessica is the Arch Enemy T-shirt, which is a large. And this will go along with a... Which one is this? This is the red-green Scorch the World of Dragonfire Arch Enemy deck. So that is the number one prize. Number two through five prizes, we have Leveler Scorn. That's a Rise of the Eldrazi intro pack. We have a Fire Bomber. That's an M10 core set intro deck that has Shaven Dragon. We have the... This one doesn't have a name on it. Oh, Breath of Fire. That's an M11 core set. That's red-blue that has an Ancient Hellkite on it. We also have a Duels of the Planeswalkers, the Nissa Ravain, Ears of the Elves deck, which is by far the best of the paper Duels of the Planeswalker decks. And to round it up, we're going to give away three draft sets of packs. Because every time that we do these booster pack giveaways, I always have like three packs left over. And after you do enough of these contests, I have this box of random booster packs now. And it takes all my willpower not to open them. What is the longest that you guys have ever had booster packs in your possession that you haven't opened?
I just opened, like 2 weeks ago, I did a Ravnica booster draft with Ravnica packs I won back when it came out.
Wow. Okay, there's no way I can actually top that. I got a booster box for Christmas one time, and I actually left it unopened for a week because I wanted to draft it with my friends.
I have two unopened Worldwake boxes in the other room and tons of like Ravnica packs. You know, a couple Time Spiral boosters. So a bunch
is this
of
just
sharks,
like stuff you win, Gavin, or like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll win packs or whatever, and then I save them to draft with. But if you don't finish drafting all the packs before the next set comes out, then no one needs to draft them anymore. So you just kind of keep them around. And like, I used to like sell packs, or now I kind of save them for when you want to do like old set classic drafts or whatever. So
for those other three prizes, you'll be getting three packs of random Magic cards. This could be Conflux, Worldwake, M10, Rise of the Eldrazi, whatever happens to be in my hand when I pull it out of the box. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we have a total of 8 prizes to give away. So I think that's enough incentive for people to give this a good try. And also, in the near future, when Scars of Mirrodin time is coming around, we're also working on getting some digital cards to give away, some digital packs for Scars of Mirrodin. So keep in mind for that too. Make your own From the Vault set, 15 cards, pick your theme, go nuts. I think this will be a really fun contest. All right, guys, should we bust through some emails here? And then, we've been going for about an hour and a bit here, actually.
Yeah, this is quite a lengthy show.
Oh, okay, guys. Before I get into my monologue here, do you guys have any emails you want to read quickly? Or slowly, whichever way you feel like rolling today.
Actually, yes, I did have a really good email from a listener. Hold on, let me see if I can pull up my Tumblr here.
It's really uncomfortable. I was talking to Gavin, but...
Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. No.
Oh, God, it's uncomfortable in here.
You guys with your secret bromance, by all means, just take the show on. I'll leave.
Yeah, we don't really need you anyway. I'm sorry. You're just kind of superfluous. Tom and I have been doing this.
Wow. Keeping the pimp hand strong, Gavin comes out of left field like Denard Span.
Yeah, last week it was Eric, and this week it's Gavin. Good grief.
You are like Nick Punto. You're my new hero.
I mean, really, like Tom and I have been kicking it since the old days, right? Like, I mean,
yeah, since like episode, what did we calculate? Was it six?
Seven, right?
Seven? Okay.
Seven. Yeah, but I mean, everybody needs that one schmuck they can abuse, and guys, I'm that schmuck. I'm
right, that's
schmuck.
Why we keep you around.
Take me behind the woodshed and hit you with a handle.
Thank you so much.
You're good for fooling around with some things, and, you know, Eric's good for talking about Frost Titan with.
That was a fun conversation.
All right, well, back to the email I got. I actually got an email from Brad this week, who is a listener of the show, and he expressed concern over what he thought was becoming cancerous for MTG. This was after last week when I mentioned that Jace the Mind Sculptor was actually one of my like most despised cards.
I got a lot of emails about that, actually.
Yeah, I got a lot of mail on both sides of the fence about it, but Brad raised a very good part, and you can actually read this on my Tumblr account, The Bitter Better Man, which is tied into my Twitter, Jack from Tumblr, Jack LaToy on Twitter.
Yeah, not work safe for his Twitter feed or Tumblr feed. Just to let everybody know.
If for any reason at all whatsoever you want to read my Tumblr, some of it is about magic. Most of it is not about magic.
It's about ladies.
Ladies. Well, I mean, I'm all about the ladies, though, Tom. Really. But Brad posted an excellent email, and I've got a little piece of it there on my Tumblr, and it was just basically about he was concerned about where the game was heading, like with pricing and whatnot, especially with mandatory mythic rares like Jason the Mind Sculptor, Baneslayer Angel, Gideon Yura, and stuff like that. I mean, it was just a really good email. So, Brad, thank you very much for sending that in to me this week.
Yeah, because I agree. We got. I won't go through all the emails, but we got a lot of emails. I would say mostly that people that agreed with you, Jack, were they overall did not like having a format-defining card that is now approaching $100.
Well, I mean, my main problem with it is when Mythic Rares were first revealed, it was supposed to be for Planeswalkers and just very, like, legendary kind of flavorful cards. And, you know,
but
I don't want to say...
Jace the Mind Sculptor is a Planeswalker, though.
No, I mean, yeah, I agree to that. But, I mean, it was supposed to be more for... I was under the impression we weren't going to have such... necessary cards of the mythic rarity. And I mean, that is my fault for believing that, and I'll completely own up to that. But I mean, we are very fast approaching a format that's going to be defined by some of the mythic rares, like Vengevine, not Vaginavine, like Conley said.
Vengevine! I'm like, I'm not even going to step into this one. We're going to Vaginavine. Here we go.
I'm an English major, and I'll be teaching your children one day. Oh. Okay, but that being said, we're getting into like this sort of mythic-defined format, and I mean, Gavin, I know you're probably seething over there on the end of the other end, but that really kind of disgusts me. Like, Standard is supposed to be the stepping stone for newer players to get into competitive Magic and into other formats like Extended and Legacy, and I'll even say Vintage. And, you know, when you have that kind of barrier for people, it's very prohibitive, and I mean, sometimes it really bothers people.
Gavin, we have you here. We've had a lot of talk about Jace Mind Sculptor here over the last few weeks. What are your thoughts on this?
Okay. I do not think that it is correct for Standard to have a card that is worth nearing $100. Obviously, the thing is that Wizard did not intend for it to be worth this much. I mean, they didn't print the card thinking, yeah, this is going to be a $100 mythic, right? It's just partially due to... What's that?
I completely agree with you on that. I mean, this has happened before. Like, they didn't expect Tormagoyf to take off like it did, or, like, with Reflecting Pool, even.
Well, there's even a big difference between, like, this and Tormagoyf. Because with Tormagoyf, that was a mistake. Like, they didn't understand how powerful it was. With Jace, they knew when they printed it, it was a very powerful
thing. It was really freaking good.
But at the same time, you know, previous Mythics had been, like, you know, $30, $40 tops, right? And there's, like, well, it's not going to go over that. Or, you know, maybe 50 at most. You can't predict something like this. So, I mean, yes, I agree. I think it's bad for Standard. And I think Wizards has to be careful with this kind of, you know, new thing they're trying with. But, just how, you know, we're talking about this earlier, about how they've had, you know, 18 years to work on stuff with Magic, and they've got most of it right. But when they're introducing something brand new like Mythics, there's still a lot of experimentation they have to have. They've only had a handful of sets that have Mythic Rares in them. And so they don't know what, you know, the cap on how much a Mythic Rare is going to be worth it. So, you know, we can't really blame Wizards for this. Yes, I think it's bad for the format, but at the same time, there's nothing you can do. You can't just, like, ban Jace or anything, you know?
No,
so
I mean, I'm not even suggesting anything as ludicrous as that. I'm just saying that, and, you know, it's just very scary, I guess, for newer players, which seems to be the target audience that they're trying to grab. But no, you're absolutely right, Gavin. I mean, people, when they're complaining about how cards like this are influencing certain formats, they need to remember the basic laws of supply and demand. There's a lower print of Jace, and many people want him. And a lot of people are not even letting go of him, so that means there's less of this card floating around for certain people to get a hold of. So, I mean, it's not really Wizard's fault. It's just, you know, that's just how the economy floats on the card.
Do you guys find it strange that we don't yet have a spell that says, in essence, destroy target Planeswalker? We have cards that can specifically destroy a given permanent for every other type besides Planeswalker.
So they talked kind of about this in an article. I think maybe it was one of LaPelle's articles, I'm not sure. But it just feels really weird to read that. And it's not very utilitarian because, you know, you kind of get the same effect by saying non-creature permanent a lot of the time. And I think it's going to do similar things. And you can print that card at common, like say Root Grapple, right? Root Grapple is destroy target non-creature permanent. If it said destroy target Planeswalker, it would have to be a rare, because you can't print a card like that at common.
Because otherwise you'll have piles of them that you just don't want, and they're just going to clog up draft. And
yeah, I mean, it should clog up drafts. It's also, you know, you open one and you're a new player, you're like, what is it doing here? It's kind of a rare effect because it's weird, like, it'd be the first of its kind. And so you don't really want that. I think that they found an elegant solution for stuff like Oblivion Ring, for example, which deals with Planeswalkers and Constructed, deals with them when they come up in Limited, but also can do other things at the same time. So, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I fully expect at some point we will see a card that specifically says destroy a target Planeswalker. I don't think that's something that they need to do in the immediate future, or, you know, something that is weird that we don't have it right now. I could see it happening as soon as Scars of Mirrodin, I guess.
And what color pie would that be, do you think, in your mind?
It feels very naturally black.
Okay, you're just kind of destroying. I don't know. In my mind, I was almost thinking white, and I can't explain why. I think because of, like, Oblivion Ring and Swords of Plowshares, where I can think of white being able to destroy pretty much every permanent that it wants to.
Can take out creatures. Salt Blast.
Yeah, exactly. Because white can take out lands, artifacts, enchantments, creatures.
Yeah, the thing about Magic is you can really flavorfully justify anything. You could probably, you know, you come up with ways to make green want to deal with Planeswalkers if you want, right? But it's fitting into a color pie that's kind of weird when you already have the target permanent in color pies already. You also have to remember that red already functionally has cards to say destroy target Planeswalker. They're called, like, Fireball.
Yeah, because that for creatures, too, and we have, obviously, many ways of destroying creatures that is not damage.
Right, of course. I mean, I agree with that. But I feel like they've done a very good job of dealing with it up to this point. Will we see in the future? I think almost certainly they will definitely print a card that says that at some point in the future.
Okay.
And they'll have it in the right color pie, or maybe it'll be an artifact. Who knows?
It could be the six-color purple, which we're going to have at some point to keep the game fresh.
You know.
Which was so totally rumored by Tom.
Oh, it was such a good movie, too.
But so, you know, I think we'll see it at some point, but I don't think it's weird that we don't have it now.
Okay.
I think that despite how strong Planeswalkers are in Constructed, there are a number of good solutions to them. I think, you know, cards like Oblivion Ring are just excellent steps in the correct direction. Could we use some more ways to deal with Planeswalkers in Standard? Maybe, but creatures are already really good, and those are essentially Planeswalker removal spells. So,
I really hope that Oblivion Ring makes it into the core set sometime.
It seems, I know potentially there's some rules headaches there if you are a newer player coming to the game, but it seems like a very white card to me, and it's been around long enough where it seems like it would be a core kind of card.
Yeah, I mean, here in the next couple of months, we're not actually going to have it. That's going to feel weird.
Well, unless it's reprinted in Scars, but yes.
Right.
Oh, please. So if you want to send us any email, we're going to run through these quickly. I am Pitimp, P-I-T-I-M-P at mtgcast.com. We have Jack, which is Jack at mtgcast.com. And do you want to share your cryptic Tumblr or forum?
Sure. Actually, the best way to follow me is on Jack LaCroix on Twitter, which actually ties into my Tumblr. So you can check out my tweets and my blog where I occasionally talk about Magic, but not really.
Yeah, every once in a while. Rarely.
Yeah, every once in a while, especially when I get a very good listener email. So if you want to see me talking about Magic more often or just listen to my opinion, hint, hint.
Email. What about for you, Gavin? Email, Twitters, smoke signals, what's best?
Actually, I don't have a Twitter, although now I finally ordered a Droid X for my new phone.
Ooh, that's nice.
So, yeah, I have the same old phone for a while, so I'm finally getting a new phone, so I'll probably get a Twitter once I have a consistent way to update my Twitter.
Okay.
And, you know, check out other people's Twitters. So that'll probably change in the near future, but for now, if you want to send me an email, the easiest way is probably just the same one that my article email address, the address I give out is, which is Gavin Tries Again, which is exactly what it sounds like. @gmail.com.
Okay. From there, I wonder if you're actually going to give us email address there. It kind of seemed like you kind of go towards it, then you go away from it, and then we finally got it.
Yeah, I know. You can contact me other ways, too. That's probably the best one. You know, I'm Lasergo on most websites, so if you just find me, you can send me a private message.
Would it be best if they just approach you on the street, maybe? Would that also be preferable?
You know, it wouldn't be the first time.
This sounds like a story I need to hear.
I mean, I have definitely gotten approached by people before who were like, "Are you Gavin?" And I'm like, yes, I am. And then they're like, "Oh, that's cool." And they just, you know.
They just run off. Like, wait, my wallet's missing.
One time I signed a card for somebody. That was pretty cool.
Do you remember what card it was?
Yep, it was a Scion of Una.
Oh, okay. There you go. Let's see. We'll run through these quick. Brandon writes in, his most hated card is Dripping Dead. Yeah, and yes, that card is terrible. Phil S. from the UK, he thinks that M11 actually is more fun than M10. Jeff from South Carolina. Oh, South Carolina. Oh.
Hey, now.
Now, is there any animosity like between North and South Carolina, or are you guys brothers in arms?
No, I mean, like, I have nothing against South Carolina. Their food and drink is just as good as ours, and sometimes even their scenery is better. So, no, they're totally cool.
Oh, okay. So it's not like North Dakota, South Dakota, where there's lots of fighting and...
No, I mean, like, you got, like, the Gamecocks and the sports and stuff like that. But, I mean, I don't really follow anything where people have to play with, like, balls with other people. So, yeah.
At least if you're not paying your, you know, for those special channels on your cable.
So we did have email.
Yes. Carlos recommends, he recommended checking out some Thai action movies with an actor called Tony Jaa, J-A-A. And I watched the YouTube video of this guy. He is like Jackie Chan on crack, meth, and cocaine all mixed together. It was insane stunts, so I actually will probably check out these movies. Let's see, a person named Frankie G, he writes in that he hates the card Sphinx of Jawar Isle. So, Gavin, over the last couple of weeks, we had talked about cards that we hated. Do you have a card that you hate?
It's funny, because there's just a thread about this on our local forum. And I actually do have a card that I hate. I don't hate it in, like, the seething hatred kind of way, but it just frustrates me. And that card is Tarmogoyf. And here's the reason why. It's not because it's splashable or anything. It's not because it's too good. With Magic, I'm a competitive tournament player. If my opponent plays a turn one Sol Ring into, you know, Signet or whatever, that's why they play those cards, right? Because they're good. If they flip Blood Moon and I'm playing a bunch of non-basic lands, I mean, that's why they play that card. Tarmogoyf frustrates me because it's played so often that this comes up all the time. Literally, in, you know, half the matches you play in a tournament where it's legal, there's, you know, minutes spent on, what size is my Tarmogoyf? Let's check our graveyard every single turn. How big is it again? How big is it again? Let's check our graveyard again. How big is it? And doing this a couple times wouldn't hurt you so much, but the fact that it's like every other match over the course of, you know, the 4 years the card has been out or whatever, it just grinds on you over time. And so, you know, especially when you play with someone who can't, like, remember how big their own Tarmogoyf is, and they're, like, asking you every single turn.
What do you think of, like, Sensei's Divining Top, which has some of the same irritating things?
So it's funny. I was actually just going to mention that before you said that. Top, I think, frustrates a lot of people for the same reason. But the thing with Top is, at least when they're using it, you know they're, like, busy making a strategic decision. Where with Tarmogoyf,
you're just counting.
Yeah, you're just counting. Like that's all there is to it. There's nothing strategic about it. Where with Top, like, yeah, they might take a little while, but you know that at least they're, like, you know, trying to make strategy work in their favor, or, you know, whatever. And obviously, you know, in tournaments, if they're using a top, they're, you know, their skill plays in how much time you want to take, because, you know, if they're taking too long, you call over a judge or whatever. But with Tarmogoyf, like, you can't call over a judge and be like, he's taking too long to count up his Tarmogoyf. Like, it just happens. And, you know, it only takes, you know, like, maybe a minute a game, you know, between all the checks and checking the first time and everything. But it's just frustrating to deal with. It doesn't even help on Magic Online, because on Magic Online it might show up as like a 4-5 or whatever, but then you're like, well, what types do we have? What types do we don't?
You still have to count. Same thing. Okay.
That's annoying. The same thing. Because, like, even though it comes up as a certain type, like, you want to know what it is so you can add more types to it, you know? So.
Yeah, that's just plain annoying.
And then they get you with like a nameless inversion or something, and the random tribal kicks in.
It almost reminds me of the cards that came out with the original MicroProse game, where the glittering Jaguar or whatever it is, where they were cards that could only be done in a computer version because you had to keep track of all these stupid things.
Yeah,
I never thought of it that way. Matt P., I want to give him credit. He's the one that sent in the idea of the Patron of the Nozumi tribal EDH deck. Thank you, Matt. Andrew agrees with me that he's not a fan of... Is it manga or manga? I will never remember this for the rest of my
manga.
Life.
Manga.
Manga. Okay. So for all the people that email me very angry about how I pronounce it, I apologize. So manga art. He also hates Baneslayer, which I actually got a lot of emails from people saying they do not like Baneslayer Angel. I think part because of the cost of it and just that it's really, really good. Where if you don't have any, it makes you mad to have it played against you. Dustin actually wrote in, wanted to point out that there's some useful Magic the Gathering video shows. So he mentioned that Channel Fireball has some good video shows, The Magic Show with Evan Irwin, on YouTube, Elder Dragon Highlander, and then there's a person named Jesus Prodigy 14 on YouTube who posts some of the weirdest trading videos I've ever watched. As far as I can tell, he does, like, you know, mail trades where you send some maybe through like Magic Online Trading League where you send cards to each other. He then opens the envelope and videotapes it and just goes through what he got in a trade. And it was oddly mesmerizing. And I can't explain. I watched like 5 of these in a row. And it was just him going through an envelope saying, oh, this is what I got for this card and I got this for that card. I don't know why I watched it, but I did. So if you really have some time to kill, go check that out. Brad R. had a good time as M11. He said his girlfriend got a Triskelion, a Reverberate, Foil Ancient Hellkite, an Inferno Titan, and a Sun Titan, and also a Baneslayer Angel, which was pretty good. Conley from Texas, not the Conley Woods, in his first pack of his M11...
Conley from Texas.
Yes, an email address was different. So unless
Conley... Did the email say about Frost Titan or anything?
And no, it just says his first pack had a Chandra's Outrage, a Chandra Spitfire, and a Chandra Nalar in the same pack. Dylan is a new listener, and he said, this is where we talk about the Deck Builder's Toolkit. He thought that thought it was a really good way to get into Paper Magic if you started with playing Duels of the Planeswalker. So he just wanted to give that credit where credit is due. Jean-Francois likes the show and would like to see a Be a Co-Host contest. So at some point we'll actually have to do that. And my computer just went nuts. Oh, there we go. I have one of those the magic mice for the Mac where if your hand thinks about moving, it'll scroll a lot of times sideways, and that just
clearly
really messes.
You're holding it wrong.
Who says I'm holding it in my hand?
Moving right along.
David J points out that crystal. So this is a dirty magic card art that certain parts of the art for Crystal Ball for M11 do have a certain appearance to a given male appendage.
I'm looking at the card right now.
It's kind of little droopy things coming up below it. Like, I can kind of see.
No.
we're getting through the good ones now, so we're starting to dig a little deeper. Brandon from Modesto won his first ever prize at a pre-release of 3 packs and got a Dark Tutelage. So he wanted to say, and Monday Night Magic represent. So I thought that was pretty good. Let's see, what else we got? Jack T. He wrote in that he was very, very angry about the new extended changes, where he had spent thousands of dollars acquiring the cards for Extended. This change comes through, a large number of those are no longer going to be usable, and said, I'm quitting Magic. And we've had a lot of talks about this, is where I would love to hear from more of the executive part of Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro. They would never actually say it, but we want to ask them, like, do you care about formats like Legacy and Vintage? Because they, unless they're running a tournament, they don't make any money out of that at all. It's like a used video game market. The video game companies hate it. Because every time you buy a used game, they are not getting any money from that. Same where if I buy a card from, any online card store or eBay, Wizards of the Coast is not getting any money for that. They get money when people buy packs or from the vault or their sets. So, what are you guys' gut hunch on this?
You mean in regard to the extended changes?
Well, not specifically the extended changes, but, do you feel like, people obviously get very upset about this, but do we have to remember that Wizards is a company, and they don't make money off of the secondary card market?
They don't make money off the secondary card market, but, there's always been that market since the dawn of time. With Alpha and Beta, it's a collectible card game. People expect people to trade their cards and, maybe even buy and sell them. And the bottom line is, if somebody is buying or selling a card, that card had to be opened somehow. Someone at one point bought a pack from Wizards to open that card in it.
But think about Vintage, though. These are packs that were opened in 1997.
I agree. But, Wizards doesn't really... Wizards pays attention to the secondary market, but they don't really design in mind for it. Because you can't really do that as a company, and you can't really worry about that as a company. They just make the decisions that are best for them. You can make, you can't ban Jace when they're $100 because, people will spend a lot of money on them. But also, Jace shouldn't be banned. That's another point together. They can't focus on the secondary market. They just have to make the best game they can. And in this case, they thought this was what was going to make Extended better, and they kind of weighed everything into approximation, figured things out, and this is how they wanted to change the format. If they think this is what's best for the game, we have to run with it. Yeah, it sucks a lot of your cards aren't worth anything and they're taking a big dive. And, I've spent a ton of money on gathering, dual lands and all that kind of stuff. But Magic is an ever-changing game. You can't ever put too much stock in one thing, What's worth a lot today could be worth nothing tomorrow and vice versa.
Yeah, I guess that's the collectible aspect of it.
Right, exactly.
You didn't have to buy those cards. I guess that's where it comes down to.
I mean, or on the flip side, just look at the legacy market, right? Like, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, legacy cards were not worth very much. But, you know, Underground Sea is currently over, you know, what, like at $100, over $100 now? For, or, you know, they were $20.
For a beta or unlimited or, like, revised?
Just for any Underground Sea, revised what? Underground Sea. Yeah, I don't, maybe you don't know this, Tom, but so what happened with all the, like, Star City 5Ks and just a growing legacy attendance, legacy cards have just jumped in price. Like, you know, Underground Seas used to be $20, $30 just like a year or two ago, and now they're at least $8.
Jesus. I'll have to look through my dual land collection again.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it works on both ends. I mean, cards get more expensive, they get less expensive. I personally think that the extended change could have been handled with a little more tact.
It was one of those, like, this is like handed down from the mountains. Like, here you go.
I mean,
suck it.
But me and my friends talked about this a lot, and there's not really a good point to announce it. The only point you can really announce it and have it be a good time would have been last extended season, because if you say it before the season, you can be like, look, you get to play all these cards for the season. At the end of them, at the end of the season, you're not going to really want them anymore. So there's not like this big fire rush to get rid of them.
Okay.
But, you know, they came up with that decision after that happened, so they can't go back in time, and they wanted it to change before the Pro Tour. So, I mean, no matter when they announce it or in what fashion they announce it, I mean, people are going to complain about it. So,
let's see. Next up, Brian N., he sent in, this is a little bit inspired by Brian, where I talk about the stories. When we first learned how to play Magic, a lot of us learned how to play it wrong. And Brian had some of the best learning Magic stories when he started playing in Alpha. So he once won a game with Glasses of Urza enchanted with Animate Artifact to make it a 1-1. He also won a 3-player game with an Arabian Nights Camel enchanted with Fear and Fire Breathing. This is on the flip side. I also once traded a Mox Pearl for a Sarah Angel. And also traded a Mox Emerald for an Elfish Archers. but back in Alpha, Elfish Archers were really good. 2-1 first strike? It was huge. So this is why I love the early days of Magic. When, like, Crawworm was amazing. Or, like, 6-4 Trample, you had to keep that card. Let's see, Brian F., he likes to hear more about Cube discussion, and he sent in this link to a post on Channel Fireball about, is this a person you recognize the name of, Gavin? Tristan Sean Gregson?
Yeah, he does some writing for Channel Fireball, and is probably best well-known for co-hosting LCB's videos.
Okay. And Brian just wanted to write in, because he actually made the wooden box that he keeps his Cube in, and it's a very nice wooden box. Sawyer A. feels like Frost Titan was born to be a snow permanent, and it sucks overall. So there you go. Peter A., he had fun at his pre-release with... A lot of people wrote in that Overwhelming Stampede was just craziness in whatever format they were playing. If you had Overwhelming Stampede in your deck, you were likely going to be doing very, very well that day.
Yeah, I mean, it's Overrun +++.
Yes. let's see. William J., a lot of people were very excited to get the Star City Games newsletter. You know, I kind of jokingly mentioned I got this newsletter where if you bring it to a live event, there's a coupon where you can get a free 6-sided die. I don't know how many emails I got people wanting this newsletter. So if anybody hears that Star City Games is mad at me because they had to give out hundreds of dice, that's actually my fault. He also wrote in, as I was joking, that the one man that I would leave my wife for is Ryan Reynolds. This happened on the last episode. And he wanted to share that... where he is working is that Ryan Reynolds actually came into his store and bought a used camera during the filming of the Green Hornet movie, or sort of a Green Lantern. And apparently that camera was then used by Scarlett Johansson, and he wished he could be that camera. So sometimes the emails I get, they tickle me. A player named Dicax, he wrote in about being a douchebag in Magic the Gathering Online. And his experience was that he wasn't even playing in the casual room. He is a new player to Magic, and he was playing with the basically default Duels of the Planeswalker deck in the new players room. And he played somebody there who clearly had a constructed caliber deck and was hassling him because he was taking a few extra seconds to figure out kind of how the interface was working and to make sure he was going through his turn correctly. And was frequently saying, hey, what's going on? You know, I have 28 minutes left on my gameplay clock. You only have 26 minutes left on yours. You need to hurry up. So he was just kind of wondering what's the etiquette for the new player room? We're not even talking about the casual room versus the competitive room. We're talking about the new player room. And I felt like this guy was clearly being a douchebag that he was playing against.
I concur.
So
yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that the guy was there. I was just doing it to grease people.
So, and I know some people really, like, Jack, we talked a little bit about bug griefing, like two scoops griefing. But I guess when you're preying on like new players and stuff, that it's not even griefing at that point.
Well, Tom, there's a difference between I make a deck that upsets people and I play the game purposely to upset people.
Yeah, this is just, yeah, more like, yeah.
That's
griefing. This is just being a jackass.
Mine's game douchebaggery. That's actual douchebaggery.
True. I guess that is a different world. This comes out a lot more like in MMOs and stuff like this, where I have done, for the short period of time I played World of Warcraft, that's about all I did, because I couldn't actually get into the game itself.
It's like spawn camping.
It is a little bit. If anybody ever wants to email about World of Warcraft stories, I've had a really good time with that one. Because do either of you guys ever played World of Warcraft?
I did briefly, but
very
I think
briefly.
My brother was addicted for, still is for, 5 years or whatever it's been.
Oh, really? I was a human priest, and I would perform same-sex marriages in the game, and people would get irate with me, like nearly violent. And I also became a tailor in the game where I could actually make the wedding dresses for people to then do the weddings. It was great fun. I love that game. Let's see. Next, Christian R., he wrote in to check out a B-movie called Blood Diner, and also says everybody should play the game Peggle for either the PC or whatever system that they have. Eric disagrees that Jace the Mind Sculptor should be hated because he points out that it's easy to remove, but he does agree that it is overpriced.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can disagree with that. I mean, it is really...
Peter, this may be the most overpriced pack I've ever heard of. Peter from Montreal at his M11 pre-release had a... This is a cousin of a cousin. Had a cousin open a deck that had a non-foil and a foil Baneslayer in it.
Good grief.
And at the time that I wrote the show notes, Baneslayer was going for about 40 and a foil one was about 80. So I thought that was pretty wild. A listener named Poisonfly is very excited that Nantuko Shade and Rock Egg are in M11. And he pointed out as Rock Egg is being exciting in kind of white slash X control decks where you poop out a Rock Egg and you Day of Judgment the next turn. All of a sudden there's no creatures, but you have a Rock Egg, so you now have a 3-3 flyer. Is that something that's being considered to be standard worthy or not? To me, it sounded pretty good. Gavin, did you? I don't know if this is something. I'm not doing a whole lot of standard yet.
I don't know if the microphone picked it up. I said not.
No, not. Okay.
It's a Sweet Card Unlimited, though.
It puts your opponent in a very precarious situation, yeah.
And then, was it you or Eric that talked about half-price hobbies?
Oh, it was me. They actually...
You got the email from the wife, right?
Yeah, she actually... the wife actually sent in a thing where we mentioned them again on the podcast. That's half-priced hobbies, once again. And they were just absolutely tickled, and the wife sent in a beautiful picture of her in a kimono. Might not say her husband's a very lucky man. So, once again, half-price hobbies. There you go.
And I told her I was not going to post in the show notes just to make sure that there's no, harassment. This is the internet, and you have to be careful.
I mean, 4chan exists. That alone dictates that we should avoid posting pictures.
And she put down that Eternal Witness by Therese Nielsen is the hand-downs, the best depiction of female hotness and magic on artwork. And I actually put back that I had a different pick. Do you guys have any picks for what you think would be sort of an interesting kind of depiction of the female form?
I think the dual deck Liliana Vest is probably one of the better portrayals of women in Magic.
Ooh, because my pick was actually Braids, but the blue one from Planar Chaos where she has been changed, and it's the Conjure Adept version.
Well, also yes. Yor of the Getu was pretty fiery.
Yeah, good point. How about for you, Gavin? Do you have a specific pick? Some sort of ogre, maybe? I don't know.
No, Gavin only chases real women.
That's not a bad thing. Chris?
Somehow I don't think it is.
Chris writes in, he just wanted for us to give a shout-out to his local card store, Galaxy Comics in Texas. He didn't say what city, so just the great state of Texas. AJ, he wrote in, he went 5-0 with a blue-black-white sealed pool with two Temple Bells, a Grave Titan, a Platinum Angel, a Johnny, three Doom Blades, and 3-4C. That sounds like a pretty good deck.
That's win, yeah.
George writes in, his most hated card is actually Oblivion Ring. And he wrote in this story about, you have to be careful if you're a douchebag in real-life Magic, is sometimes that's going to have real-life repercussions. And he gave a story about a local douchebag player that was at a late M11 pre-release who got a ride with some friends but was being an enormous douchebag for the tournament. So they all left, and they left him at the store, and he had to call his parents to get a ride at 1 in the morning. So this is kind of keeping it real, paying the price for that. Let's see. Finn writes in. His most hated card is Sensei's Divining Top. There we go. And he also reminds Tom that the other man that I would leave my wife for is Rosie O'Donnell. So I thought that was pretty funny. And Ken from Singapore, he got the credit. I put this on the Twitter feed. He's the one that let me know that the amazing movie has been green-lighted sci-fi made-for-TV movie called Sharktopus. It's a creature that's half shark, half octopus.
Absolutely sure this is a science fiction film?
Yeah, it's listed on the sci-fi website for their upcoming movies. They officially greenlighted the project to have a trailer. It looks incredibly awesome.
Suspect.
And for you to visualize what a sharktopus is, it's an octopus, but where the top of the octopus is, where the dome would be, the head, that's where the shark head is. So it's like a shark head with tentacles on the back end. Amazing.
Oh boy. I'm giddy.
My life is going to be changed when that comes out. Shay, he agrees with you, Jack, that Jason the Mind Sculptor is not good for the game in general. And he said...
What can I say? My opinion's golden.
It is. Well, he gave the example of kind of... He was trying to get into the F&M scene kind of right now, kind of the current standard, and he said it just wasn't viable given the price of some of these cards for Barrier of Entry. So he rediscovered Kitchen Table Magic and has been having a very good time with that, where you don't feel like you need to have $100 Jace to be competitive.
Right, and I actually talked about this in my blog. In a weird sort of way, a good justification for very high-priced rares is that they encourage more people to play casual Magic. I mean, there's been a massive resurgence in EDH at my local store. And even like in other formats, like Limited and stuff, where you don't necessarily need those cards to win, it's more skill-dependent. As bad as it is and as prohibitive as it is towards Standard, it does help out other formats.
So I guess you can kind of look at that as a plus. It does make people look at potentially different formats, just to at least explore. Sly Fox from Canada says, "Okay, guys, wonderful podcast. He likes the having the different co-hosts, the different banter." He gives a shout-out to Eric and his Frost Titan. That was the only Titan that gave him trouble during the pre-release tourney. He said he was blessed with 4 Pacify and 5 Stormfront Pegasus in his pool.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yes. Last but not least, Stefan M., he had a lot of suggestions, but he wanted more Doctor stories. So I will try to... Fortunately, I get really mixed feedback on those. People like them, but then they get mad because they actually were sickened by them.
This is coincidental, because I was actually going to ask you if I could use some of those stories in a blog post.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's no HIPAA violations in these.
I mean, definitely no doctor-patient confidentiality.
No, I mean, if you're putting snakes up your penis, you deserve to be called out on that one. That needs to stop.
Right stuff, wrong place.
Yes. It's amazing. That was one of the things I collected in residency was basically foreign objects in different orifices. And it's incredible. I mean, people do this all the time. I don't think people realize how common it is for people to take stuff and shove it in a hole. I think just to see if it fits or if it's going to feel good or feel bad. I don't know why they do it, but they do.
New topic.
You don't want me to keep going on this, Gavin?
My imagination.
Let's not talk about any more stimulation.
I've told the right stuff story already, haven't I? The
spray
foam.
You told
okay.
That.
Okay.
Hence,
good.
Right stuff, wrong place.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So, guys, that's my emails. We have just a little bit of MTG Cast news, and then we'll wrap this one up. I'm gonna take that.
On
to the news. So, MTG Cast news. We already announced the giveaway again. Make from the vault set. Post it in the MTG Cast forums. Give away a bunch of good stuff. And Chris Otwo, who he does a lot of behind the scenes work, helps kind of keep me sane by posting up some of the articles and helping moderate comments, things like this. He actually moderated and approved the 6,000th comment on an MTG Cast podcast on MTGCast.com. I thought that was kind of cool.
Does he deserve a clap for that? I think so.
I think so. So I'm clapping for Chris. And the other cool thing is the person that did the 6,000th post was Hector.
Oh, Hector.
Yes. And Hector is awesome because I actually got to meet him in real life. He came here to Minneapolis, so I thought that was awesome. So Hector... if you're listening, send me an email and we'll send you some sort of a prize for being the 6,000th comment on MTG Cast. Because there's no way he could have known that this is something you can only see on the back end of the WordPress site. And guys, that's all I got. And Jack, I took your recommendations and all the negative feedback I got for when I put up the new look for the site. It is now not all white.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh, man. It was just bright, stark white. I mean, speaking to somebody that actually uses stark white as his own background, it hurts your eyes after a while. Maybe a softer color like blue or something that would be better. But have you just changed it completely back to the way it was?
Yeah, no. I just changed the colors of the new look of the theme, but made it so it's not all white. So now there's actually different colors.
Okay, yeah. It really just hurts your eyes after a while. But yeah, actually, as soon as I saw that, I must say, Tom, out of all the theme changes you've done, that was the first one I absolutely noticed.
Okay, good. So, guys, that is the end of the show. I try to integrate my movie and video game talk into the show, as opposed to making it kind of at the end. And also, we're all approaching 2 hours, so my voice is actually starting to get hoarse.
My knees hurt and started to give out. So, yeah, I agree that we wrap this one up. What about you, Gavin?
I guess.
Well, how do your knees hurt?
Oh, like, I actually have really bad knees. I don't know why it is. I think it's
Are you standing while you podcast? I'm trying to. Are you doing push-ups?
No. Like, I'm actually a great deal of the day. I'm actually standing up and like crawling through ventilation shafts and stuff, running cables, and I'm on my legs a lot during the day. And as weird as it sounds, I guess I've just gotten used to standing up and doing things all day. So when I sit down, if I sit down for too long, my knees are just like, oh, mercy, mercy, we can't be bent at a 90-degree angle.
Do you have like restless legs or anything, like at nighttime?
Yeah, like all the time I'll just get up and wander around. I have really bad insomnia too, but you probably know that.
You might actually have restless legs.
I have no idea what I have, but like I'll be sitting there at night and all of a sudden I'm like, yep, time to go run a mile. Let's go run a mile.
Interesting. You should. Well, yep. We should actually talk at some point, since that's part of my specialty. Now, Gavin, for you, do you have some big tournaments now coming up that you've been preparing for, it sounded like?
The biggest thing to come up, I guess, is probably Nationals next month.
Okay.
I'm also qualified for the Magic Online mocks at the end of this month, too. So.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so.
And are you
tournament's coming up.
Are you actually going to be able to join us now for some future podcasts, maybe? We've given you the taste. The first one's free, Gavin. The next one you got to pay for.
I mean, I'm going to try and be back next week. But, I mean, I'd love to promise you guys I'll be back next week, but I've done a pretty bad job at that.
So I almost was to the point where I wasn't sending you the show notes anymore, because I thought I was actually bothering you with them.
No, you weren't bothering me with the show notes. It's I actually like knowing what you guys are going to talk about and going into ad and stuff. But it's... But yeah, I mean, I'll try and be back next week. I can't make any guarantees because I guaranteed I'd be back, you know, lots of weeks.
I'm a harsh mistress, you know this, Gavin, that I demand results.
Well, I'm just going to be honest, too. Gavin, I miss your company. Show up more often.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, like you said, Gavin, we had done the podcast together for a long time. So it's actually...
Yeah, dude, we miss you.
I miss me sometimes, too. Like, I miss talking to y'all. It's a good time.
Yeah. So, a bunch of warm fuzzies, big man hug here, big group hug here at the end. It's not often we end the show on a really positive note. I like this. So we should end it before I say something really stupid. We're going to end the show right now. We'll just say goodbye, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.